much in your goodness to just bless your name because the name worthy to be blessed. Father, we look more to you now than ever before for your blessings, for your guidance, and we thank you now for what you've done thus far. We thank you for where you brought us from, where you carried us to. We love you now because you first loved us. Just we ask you to bless you now for this council, the citizens of this town, this state, and this United States, this country, this world. We pray right now for all those who stand in need to pray. Those who need to pray, Father, we pray for them too. And we thank you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm sorry.
If y'all could just excuse me for 1 minute.
Thank you.
Yes. Tonight, but they're not going to be able to call in because they have an emergency they're responding to right now. So that's what that was about. Okay. In an effort to protect the public and the Board of County Commissioners, a conference line has been set up to accommodate community access to the meeting. So for the conference call, please dial 1-917-900-1022. I'm going to repeat that number. Dial 1-917-900-1022. And enter the access code 32347 and the pound sign. And then enter the pound sign again when asked for the PIN. This is not a toll-free number. You may according to your long-distance plan. And then when the meeting is open for public comment, you can follow these instructions. If you wish to speak, please dial the *5. The moderator will unmute your line when it is your turn to speak and notify you by announcing the last 4 digits of your telephone number. Please announce your name and address. You will be allowed to speak for 3 minutes. If you wish to view the meeting on Facebook, you must have a Facebook profile. Search under Taylor County Board of County Commissioners, and you can view the meeting at 6 p.m. The Facebook live stream will not be monitored for questions or comments. Please call the conference number if you wish to speak. And what I'm going to
line unmuted.
And what I'm going to do is, after each agenda item, after our discussion, then I'm going to ask, are there any comments or questions from the public? So everybody will have a time that you can comment on anything you would like. We will move along to item number 3, approval of the amended agenda. And everybody got the amended agenda. Item 30A was added, the board to discuss possible grant submissions for phase 2 and phase 3 of the FDEO rebuild for CDBG mitigation CDBG-MIT program as agenda by the grant writer. Are there any more changes additions, deletions, or anything else to the agenda.
Commissioner Beagle, are we tabling the sheriff's office item until the next meeting?
He did not say to table it.
Okay.
Do you mind to call him and just make sure that he does not want us to table the item for him? And let me know. I didn't understand him to say that we were going to table it. Okay, is there a motion to approve the amended agenda?
I move.
I second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Gifford, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Bids and public hearings number four. The board to receive bids for the leasing of 296 plus or minus acres for the harvesting of salt, palmetto berries in Taylor County, Florida, per pound price of harvest berries set for this day at 6 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
He says, no, ma'am, don't table it. The vote on it.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes.
He does not want to table. I didn't think it was on.
All right, two bids, Philopolis Produce from Immokalee, Florida, and Blue and Shiver Enterprises from Greenville, Florida.
Myself, Lori Wiggins, and Danny Brainer.
Salt palmetto varies for the percentage of 35% of the gross sale.
It actually should be percentage, not per pound price.
Enterprises. The bidder agrees to lease 296 acres for the harvest of salt palmetto berries for the percentage of 35% of the gross sale.
35%. So at this time we have two bids and they're both at 35% of gross sales. However, one of them, well, he's got an address in Greenville. He lives in Taylor County because he lives back behind Irides.
Right.
So even though they have a Greenville address, they do reside in Taylor County. So I think according to our protocol, we give a local bit of preference. So.
And they did this work last year.
Yes.
Turned out to be satisfactory.
They did.
Good folks to work with.
Yes, very. So this will go to the good committee, which is you, Lori Wiggins, and Danny Brunner. And y'all will bring this back to the next meeting?
Yes.
Is that going to be in time for them to get there to do what they're supposed to do?
I would think so.
Okay, it will. Okay.
It'll be September.
Okay. We've got time to do that.
Okay, we tried to start earlier this year.
Okay, thank you. Awards and recognition, number five. The board to consider adoption of proclamation recognizing the 107th birthday of Mrs. Dora Smith as agended by Commissioner Gibbs. Mm-hmm. Is there a motion to read this proclamation in its entirety?
I make a motion.
I second.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Murphy and a second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop?
My pleasure. Whereas longevity of life is a gift for an individual and a community which benefits from knowledge, creativity, and experience this individual brings to all, and whereas Taylor County recognizes with respect and admiration the contribution of senior citizens to our community, and whereas Ms. Dora Smith was born in Live Oak, Florida on June the 15th, 2013, and moved to Taylor County in the late 1970s and has lived here for the majority of her life. Her family describes her as strong in her faith and was an active member of New Bethel Missionary Baptist Church. The cornerstones of her life, hard work, faith, and family. And whereas Ms. Smith's greatest testament to how long she lived her life is the care of her family gives her as she continues to grow older. And whereas the life expectancy worldwide are below 100 years, and whereas the United States has the greatest number of centenarians in the world, and today Ms. Smith should be honored for her 107 years on this earth. And now, therefore, we proclaim that the Taylor County Board of County Commissioners honor Ms. Dora Smith for her long life and prosperity and wish her many more. Done in order this 6th day of July, 2020 in Taylor County, Florida, Pam Peeble, Chairperson of the Board.
Commissioner Gibbs, mm-hmm. You want to say something first?
Yes. That's a milestone. Milestone we all desire to reach. I understand she's about 90% capacity. She can do what she wants to do. She cooks for herself. She just needs some help at that age. At my age, I need help now. So 107, if you need any help at all, or you can do anything for yourself, I think it speaks volume for her. The Lord has been blessing her. She do have a daughter, I think, and two sons left. Her grandson and my baby daughter, I think, is seeing about her, and I wish to make this proclamation, make this presentation to them. I wouldn't ask them to come tonight because of the pandemic, so I do wish to make this presentation. They were just okay with me coming out.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Anybody else?
107 years old.
Need a second.
Mm-hmm. Need a second.
Need a second.
Yes. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. I'll make second. Okay. Okay. We got a motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I want to wish a very special belated happy birthday to Mrs. Smith, and I hope you have many, many more.
Good. Thank you.
Consent items 6 through 19. Is there a motion to approve the consent items 6 through 19?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public request number 20. Scott Nixon, Public Affairs Manager, and Chet Thompson, Ben Holland Lake Program Manager, Georgia Pacific, Foley Cellulose Mill, to appear via live stream to provide update on the Ben Holland Lake Water Quality Project. Scott and Chet, are you there? Hello?
Foley. 1275.
Good evening, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
All right, thank you very much for having us this evening, even though it has to be via phone. We're looking forward to a time where we can meet with you in person, so we regret not being there in person tonight. First and foremost, again, thank you for having us, and thank you to your staff for being so patient and willing to work with us on a daily basis. We always want to express our appreciation for them and what they do and what you all do for the county. Again, as was stated, the purpose of our meeting today or tonight is to provide you an update of the Ben Holloway Water Quality Project, specifically the pipeline, which Chet will probably tell you tonight that we have 100% of the pipe in the ground, which is a very big deal, and he'll give you an update on that. And plus, we have a request that we do need to make with regard to Peterson's Landing. So without further ado, let me introduce Chet. He's, as you know, he's our project manager for the Ben Holloway Project, but now he is also our environmental leader for the Foley Cellulose Mill, and we're very proud to have him in that role. So, Chet, take it away.
Thank you for listening to me tonight. We're actually watching you live stream right now, so I'm able to see you all. Unfortunately, you can't see us, but hopefully in the future. We did have a slide, but without going down specifically on the slide, I want you to know the big picture since we last talked is that there's been a lot of progress made, and I know many of you have driven along the route and know how much work has been done out there, but there's still work to be done to finish. And as Scott mentioned, the actual pipe is all in the ground right now. We're undergoing pressure testing right now. All the road crossings are complete. The actual outfall is 100% complete down out in the river off of Peterson Landing, and the pump station up here just off of 19 is 100% complete too. We are finishing up the cleaning of the pipe. There's been a significant amount of need to clean to make sure before we ever send water down the pipe, it is cleaned out from all the dirt and sediment that got in it during the installation. Make sure it will all handle the pressure testing, and then we'll be ready for actual startup testing, and we're looking for startup testing to begin on the 20th of August is our plan right now. Kind of separate from the testing is all the restoration that has to be done, and I confess there's a lot of restoration to do. All the surface over top of the pipe, the road crossings mostly still need work done. Puckett Road is primarily done, but other than that, the road crossings need to be done. Significant work along Hampton Springs and down Peterson Landing still needs to be done and requires restoration. And right now that work is scheduled and will need to go all the way through into September. And so kind of as a final part of our discussion is we are needing to keep Peterson Landing closed until the beginning of October 1st, and are requesting permission that Peterson Landing Road remain closed for the safety of folks, for the proper testing of the pipe and startup of this operation. As we've done in the past, Hicks Fish Camp, will be continue to be open so people can continue to have access to the Gulf down there in a safe fashion. So we've continue to support that. And so that is our request, and I'm open to questions that you might have.
Thank you, Chip. Any questions from the board? Staff? Okay.
No questions.
All right. Are there any questions from the public? Anybody listening in? No, we don't have any calls. Okay, well, I don't have any questions either. I really appreciate you guys keeping us updated on this the way you have. Communication's been very good. We really appreciate that.
Well, it's our pleasure. Chad, in closing, I want to, publicly state thank the staff, Kenneth Dudley, and Hank Evans, and Scott Knight, and Gary Walmart, and then Melinda we've worked them all a lot, and they have been very supportive in making communications and issues we had out there along the route. And I want to thank the commission for how supportive the staff is. They have been excellent and continue to be excellent to work with.
Well, we sure do appreciate you recognizing our hard working staff. Thank you for that.
Madam Chair, we need a motion to keep the Lightning Road closed. Or, Ms. Bishop, what do you think? His request was to keep Peterson Landing Road closed through September 30th, 2020.
It's already closed then, right?
It's already closed.
Isn't that correct?
Yes.
It's
right.
A keep, so I imagine. Yeah, it's not a permanent closure, so you don't need to.
Don't need to do anything.
You don't need to do anything. Just say continue to be closed.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you all so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Next are hospital items number 21. The board to discuss emergency medical services, EMS.
Melinda? So at our workshop back in February, I believe, there were several options given to the board to consider in regards to emergency medical services. One of them was to follow the contract with Doctors Memorial Hospital until 2024. The other was to amend the contract with DMH that would basically allow for a third-party provider. And the other was to follow the contract with DMH for the remainder of the fiscal year. And then on 10-1, the county assumed responsibility of EMS and contract with a third party. There's been some discussion since then, but this item was discussed in a workshop. So basically, we're at the point where we need direction from the board as far as which option you wish to move forward with.
Can I speak first?
Sure.
I had an opportunity last week to meet with Pat Barbary and Tom Stahl. Tom was joining the meeting by telephone. His wife had COVID-19 and he's quarantined. But we discussed some things that I could deal with. And I discussed with them the fact that they had stated that they don't want to run the ambulance service. I said, we don't want to run the ambulance service either. But we're here to see if we can do something, meeting his minds. And I said, I'm willing to support giving Doctors Memorial Hospital for the ambulance services the $307,000 for the old hospital. Now, they lost $206,000 last year. But if you add 206 and 206 for several years, you're in the hole big time. I said, we have some money. I got to talk to Lon about it, that we may be able to purchase an ambulance. I don't know if you ever followed up on that, but it's legit to use some of this federal money we're getting.
We're still trying to run that down. There are several counties who are pursuing that as
well. So I can live with those two things.
and at least that would buy us some time, would help our hospital. I had a son-in-law the other day, he had come a week ago to the emergency room on Monday morning, and they sent home with some bills. I told him to go get some bills, and then he surfaced over Live Oak, and they said the bills are all right. And he got a hold of Dr. Nelson, and he said, "You'd be in 45 minutes, man, you're sick." And they admitted him, he spent one night. And they bragged on the great service that they got from the hospital. They had two patients. He stayed one night, and he's much better. But I don't know what gangrene does, so you really have gangrene in a little, they think it's a tick bite in a place that I won't describe where. But I want to do all I can because I may be the next patient out there. And it's suffered, and we put this off long enough. But Lonnie, when will you know something about the money for the ambulance?
Oh, it may take, I would give it at least a couple of weeks. Some of the guidance coming down seems to vary, but I think that if other counties are successful in being able to utilize their CARES Act funding for ambulance purchases, then I think we should be as well.
All right. I'm prepared to make a motion when everybody else has a chance to speak.
I'd like to say one thing. I had a meeting with them too, and I feel the same way you do about helping them out and get this thing going. But there's one thing we need to take out of that money from the old Sable Hospital, and that's getting the tower down.
Okay.
And one that's been working on getting some bids up for get the tower at the old hospital down, and the one at the highway patrol station, old highway patrol station at the same time. The man can do them both for what they really wanted one to part with, mm-hmm. while he does them both at the same time. I reckon he rents the equipment and comes to us, you know, he needs to give us a discount.
What a ballpark figure is for the tower now?
I think he ain't got the whole thing set, but One fellow said, I think it's $30,000, and that's what they wanted to just take one down.
Yeah.
To start with years ago, a year and a half ago. So.
Did that tower become part of the new purchaser's responsibility, or we kept responsibility for the tower?
We kept.
The tower is on county property, and the reason we have discussed taking it down is because I believe there's some guide wires. That's on the old hospital property, right. That we have the responsibility to take.
We got to keep the lights up on the table. We need to get them down.
I can live with that.
So the importance of taking the tower down is what now?
So get the wire, the guide wire off of the property that we sold, and quit paying an electric bill on the lights and having to maintain the lights to make it safe.
How much is that, do you know?
I'm not sure.
I don't know, but the main reason to take the tower down was the safety issue of the tower itself, on the concern for it potentially falling. The tower is located off the parcel that we included in the hospital transaction. There is like a double guy that comes down on that side. Remember, we tried to go the same route by soliciting through GovDeals to have somebody, but the stumbling block was the liability insurance. The workers' comp insurance.
Right.
And, you know, that we tried our best to figure out a possibility where it was legally palatable to do it. Unfortunately, we couldn't. But, you know, you are correct that one bid, because we solicited hard bids for dismantling that tower, that one, I want to say, was like 29 or right at 30, and the one at the high patrol station was a hair less than that, like 26 or something, somewhere in that area.
Well, if you take 30 and 26, that's 56,000.
Yes, sir.
From 307,000.
It was 310.
The what?
It was 310 was the sale price.
310? So they're losing, the hospital potentially. If we reduce the amount that we can allocate them from the old hospital, they're not getting 310. They're getting about 250.
Right.
Or whatever, about 250.
Yeah,
I'm sure they would turn that down.
Right, and you remember we did, during the discussions of advertising for sale of the hospital, we fully intended to use the proceeds from that to remove those towers. I mean, that was intended from the very beginning.
Yeah, but do we have any other source of revenue to take the tower down other than to use that 310?
You can have somebody do it for free if you can figure out a way to get past the insurance, but you know, we haven't
been able
to. We tried, how many times have we advertised? Twice or three times on GovDeals?
I've only advertised, on GovDeals was just the one time.
But then we let it.
We extended it.
For what, 3 months?
It was maybe another 3 weeks.
I mean, the total was?
The total was like 2 months, something like that.
The longer look for the money and care that for two ambulances, then hospital we made whole.
I don't, and because of the provisions in the CARES Act, I did ask about that, and I'm not sure that we could do that, but we are looking into that as well.
All right. That's all we can ask them.
Okay. I understand why we need to remove the child. I think that's a given. And I'm just a little not certain. I know that we need some improvements to the ambulance service, and I'm wanting to do whatever it takes to make sure that we ensure public safety and that we can have reliable ambulance service. There's just a lot of other things that I'm not quite sure of. If we took part of the proceeds from the sale of the old hospital, and if we bought an ambulance, and we go along with helping them until October the 1st, and then we take it over, and then we contract with a third party, then what would happen to that ambulance that we had already put quite a bit of money into? Because it's my understanding that when you contract with that third party, that they already have ambulances and they have everything that they need. So what would happen, Commissioner Page, to if we spend $300,000 on ambulances, what happens then?
Yeah, we have ambulances for sale, I guess. And that's a good point you made. Now, you mentioned October the 1st, that you're talking about October the 1st, 2021.
No, I'm talking about this year.
Well, I was thinking in our conversation that I had with Pat and Tom Stone that we'd buy at least a year. That's what you understood, Jim? Yeah. So if we can't get a year out of this, then that's more negotiation we need to do.
Okay, so are they saying then, because we met with them, but I don't think this was answered. So are they saying then that if they had an ambulance or two, that would make them whole until October 1st of 2021, we wouldn't have to worry about it till then, and we'd have reliable service?
Well, I didn't put it in those terms, but that's the way I took it. Is that the way you understood it, Jim?
Maybe.
Did they put any of that in writing?
No, not yet.
I've got reservations, and to be just quite candid, that ambulance service is in a mess. And it's in a mess because they allowed it to get there. You've got the hospital administrator, and you've got the majority of the hospital board that's responsible for letting this ambulance service be in the shabby condition that it's in. So I don't know that I'm not confident that we would have jam up service for another year. How many months? 4 months. But if they say they can do that and they put that in writing, then the only question that I have is what are we going to do with an ambulance or two on our hands? Well, you probably can't give any money for them. But for bottom line, I want this community to have what it needs in terms of a reliable, good EMS service You will not have to worry if it's going to break down on the road. Or if you've got personnel, that's another issue they have is personnel issues, keeping people there. So at the end of the day, I certainly think that a third party will be the way to go to ensure that Taylor County citizens have a good service.
I agree.
Whichever one y'all want to speak?
Yeah, I talked to Tom and Pat Dogger. I like to keep the money in Taylor County. I just believe that somebody in Taylor County runs a good health service. I know we go elsewhere and get everybody we want to bring in here, and they come in here and make a fortune of us. But why can't we do that?
That's a good question.
Why can't we do that? I just believe you can put a little more responsibility on some folks, pay a little more money, and we will know. If these people work for us, then before we get into that predicament, we will know.
And that's a possibility, but that's not somewhere that we can, that's not a turnkey operation that we could start tomorrow. I think it would take us
a year.
Probably a year to get to the point where we should run an EMS service ourselves and not go to a third party.
Okay, well now, somebody made a suggestion that we give them maybe, they said $300,000. What about $200,000 in dollars? Now, we can probably help you out the hole, but we need another year of operation. So if we got that $150,000 left for another year while we train our people to do, to take over the service. We got people in Perry and elsewhere that's doing great jobs all over this country. And I don't know why we can't bring them up from here rather than hire them and bring them in here, somebody else train them and bring them in.
Well, it's not a matter of us training someone to be a dual certified firefighter medic. And we do have to recruit for our fire service. We have to recruit quite a bit, and we do have employees that come in from other areas. So I don't know that it would be any different. I mean, I really don't know. Obviously, if we ran a standalone EMS service, then it's possible that displaced employees from another service could continue to work in Taylor County. But I do think it would take, that's not a turnkey operation, and it's not a matter of us training. It's a matter of recruiting qualified employees.
Yeah.
And I want you, if you will, because you and I discussed this at length, and there were a lot of reservations from your part for the county doing that. I mean, you're here to do the best job you can to get the best service that we can at the best price. I understand that, and if we can keep things simple, but if you don't mind to share with the board and the public some of the issues there would be with the county running this.
Well, there are two possibilities. There's a possibility of running a standalone EMS service, and then what I've heard from other individuals is an interest in running a combined fire service. And again, part of my concern is recruitment of qualified individuals. To recruit dual certified fire medics may be a little bit of a challenge, but I'm not saying it's insurmountable. We don't have current staff to do that. My biggest concern is the amount of capital investment it would take to purchase ambulances, stretchers, cardiac monitors. We would have to get
all those items. You know, they belong to the county.
Well, from what I understand, the ambulances and the cardiac monitors are nearing the end of life.
So they need to be replaced.
Yes, sir. That's my understanding. So when we looked at the initial capital investment, we had numbers kind of all over the place, but I think a conservative number is $500,000. to get what we needed. And there's certain licensing we would have to have. We would have to hire a medical director. And then all of the, we would have to hire a billing company, a third-party company, and then there's contract negotiations with the other, with all of the insurance carriers. So, and again, it's not insurmountable, but it's something that would take some time.
No.
And it's not a turnkey operation. So, like, DMH can't transfer life insurance over to the county. So, my concern when we looked at the numbers, it would take even more of an investment than what we're paying now. And I'm concerned about where we would get the additional revenue to offset this expenditure. Because if you look at, if DMH is basically operating at a $200,000 a year deficit, then I'm not sure that we could do any better than that. I just don't know. It's not something we've done in many, many years. And I believe when we ran an ambulance service previously, we were not successful as far as, I wasn't here, so I believe that was a challenge to generate the revenue it needed, it, we needed to offset the expenditures. So whether we go with a third party, or we run a combined service, or we run a standalone EMS service, I don't, I'm not sure where we would obtain the additional revenue.
Well, I'm not a math whiz, but I do know that we can't run it. Others can't run it either. If it takes $500,000 to $600,000 to run ambulance service for somebody else, if we got to participate, if we need to fight a bullet and do what we want to do sometimes for ourselves, up to going out of contract with somebody else. Not. I'm a firm believer that sometimes it's not really what you see, it's what you hear, what your ears see. Mm-hmm. Now, and I said before, we got people in Taylor County, or from Taylor County, the third person in charge of the Cincinnati, Ohio State, Ohio, a school system. And these people grow up in Taylor County. When they're here, the first thing they're going to get to us in the classroom. So, but I think we can seek out and try to elevate and find somebody without any, the buddy-buddy system. Try to find somebody who can work and who can push. Now, you know, since I've been on this council, we have had another county administrator. We went outside of that, you know, if he had a record. Yeah, you were one. We took a chance with you and you don't say, okay, hey, you're doing a good job. Why can't we find something like that?
I don't think their personnel is the issue. And it's, and if I somehow relayed that's not my concern, is that we would have someone to run it. And I, you know, obviously I will do whatever y'all want me to do.
Yeah.
My concern is how we will pay for it.
So you mentioned you need about $500,000. That's in addition to the $400,000 we already paid Dr. Momoro for ambulance service?
Well, the capital investment, we're guessing. I mean, I don't have hard numbers. The capital investment would be anywhere from $300,000 to $600,000, so I said $500,000, and that's just off the top of my head.
So we're talking about almost $1 million.
And that's...
Does that compare with Dixon County, what they're paying for ambulance service?
Probably so. It's that, and that's just for the capital investment, and if you say what we pay now, which is $450,000, I don't expect us to be able to run, you know, EMS for $450,000 a year.
What about somebody else? Do you expect them to run it for the same amount?
I wouldn't think so. I don't think we would.
That go deeper in our pockets and do better?
Yes, sir. I think that it would take an additional amount of revenue to cover this expenditure, and which, you know, kind of leads us back to the same question. Now, the money from the sale of the old hospital is not recurring revenue. So that would be a one-time fix. And there are, and that would maybe give us some time if the board wishes to run in standalone EMS service or to go with a third party or to run a combined service. That would give us some time to seek out additional revenue. But I am concerned about where we would find that revenue. I know there are a couple of possibilities, but that's not something that, you know, unless I would never suggest that you use contingency funds to pay for a recurring expenditure. I think we need a recurring revenue source once we know how much it's going to cost.
Well, you know, I'm glad we're having this conversation.
Yeah, this time we do something. This is like you're rocking on about a year.
Yeah, I've been here.
We've identified, and I think we all can agree, that we're going to keep the money to move two towers. That's 57,000. Could we agree tonight to give the hospital for ambulance service 250,000 from the hospital fund? That's non-recurring. That would leave you 60,000 to move two towers. You're going to do it for that.
Why couldn't we do this? The tower of highway patrol station hadn't got to come down this time soon, but we just need to get the one down out here.
Well, you know, that's a good point. If it's not unsafe, leave it up for a while.
But before you spend all the money, though, if we're going to have to take it down, if we're going to have to come up a year from now, we spent this money that we had projected would use for that and then have to come up with another $30,000. So I like to be very careful with that.
It was included in the list from Ward that was one of the ones that needed to be taken down because of their condition.
But yeah, back to this.
One thing that I'm not comfortable with is 4 months versus the 1 year. If they're going to take our $250,000, whatever it is, and they say we don't want to run this thing, if we're only buying 4 months of time, I can't go there.
Yeah.
One thing you need to find that out from Mr. Barbary and Mr. Stone, where they talking about when they talk to me, and maybe some other commissioners, I left an impression that we would probably buy by a year's good graces with them.
That's where I do.
And if I misunderstood it, I'm sorry.
Well, we can clarify that.
Let's get clarification on that. And another thing at the end, if we do that, we're buying a temporary fix.
And then at that point, we have no return on our investment. When does the contract expire for the hospital?
224.
224. Okay. And they're asking to back out of a contract now. They're willing to give us the ambulance service now. What do they see that we don't see? Okay. If we can't take care of a situation in a sense where we have no steering mechanism, if we keep giving them money, we are receiving nothing on our investment. Zero. We're actually going into the negative. Okay. At this current time period, either we take control completely, putting it under the fire EMS status, but we can't do that. We're not fiscally sound to do so. The only option we have is a third-party contract. The majority of these contracts are 3 years. Mm-hmm. That will give us a three-year window to get the structure in place to have a complete steering mechanism and put it under the fire chief. Follow the direction of all the other counties. 67 counties in Florida. How did they do it? And they've been in the same predicament that we're in now. Throwing money in a hole is going to get us nowhere. I'm not giving any more money to that hospital. That's my opinion. Y'all can do what you want, but that's my opinion of it. We are receiving no return on our investment if we continue in that direction. At this point in time, the only viable choice we have is to third party. That will give us a window to restructure our effort to bring it back totally underneath the county, where it belongs.
Commissioner Murphy, I agree with you there, because if we do what some of the things we're talking about now. We're just hopping along, and we're putting a band-aid on it for a year. And in a year's time,
we're back where it is.
And it's hard for me to believe that $250,000 is going to be all they need for our
If that was the case, why wasn't that done years ago? If they're claiming that $250,000 is going to make them whole, why wasn't that claim made years ago?
Right. So, I mean, we're still going to be faced with this thing a year from now, right? And at least with a third party, they, from what I understand, they make sure that you always have good equipment, that you always have a good workforce. And even the ambulance service now that we have out here, they don't do their own billing. They hire that out.
That's
right. So, that's, I do agree with you there.
So you're, I mean, are you understanding what I'm saying with this, Mr. Bell? Malcolm, really?
I'm not opposed to the third party. Mm-hmm. You know, go out, leave Doctors Memorial, we go out for a third party for bids. But when I meet with these gentlemen at the hospital,
right,
Mr. Stone has already picked the party that we ought to negotiate with. And that's not right.
How
we had to pick whoever we want to choose.
And if I
not
right.
The name that he throws out there. Every time I go out there, I hear that name.
If I can speak to that, I did. We did go back to Doctors Memorial and ask it what type of system they used to solicit for quotes. And I will say that it is not in line with our purchasing policy.
Right.
So it was determined that we cannot enter into a contract at this time with DMH for them to contract out the third party because
right.
They did not follow our purchasing policy.
Exactly.
Right. So that would be something where we would need to develop the bid specifications and we would need to advertise for those services.
We, you know, y'all instructed, I wasn't going to say anything, but I got to. Y'all instructed Rwanda and myself to meet with Mr. Barbary and Mr. Stone. We did that months ago.
Right.
And again, I paired what you just said, Malcolm, about wanting to go with a particular bidder, for lack of a better term, which wouldn't be a bid anyway. Because we had information that there was other folks out there that could do a job. Understand that if you instruct staff, which I guess I'm a little bit part of the staff, to prepare a bid, knowing full well that you have the absolute right to reject any and all bids, because our figures of $900,000 a year. That's one of the ones that I heard. I also heard that if you bid it out, the successful bidder is going to want to take your equipment and use it until it falls apart.
Right.
You know, that was another thing that we heard. So I thought, you know, I said, well, I thought that might be the way to go at that particular point in time. You know, because you always always keep in the back of your mind that we put in all our bids that the Board of County Commissioners of Pedder County have the absolute discretion to reject any and all bids. And get a couple of bids, then you'll know
exactly
what it costs
right
them to do it, and they're going to make a profit.
That's right. We have a projection point at that.
Yes, sir.
Right. Once
yes,
that is entered, we have a projection point.
Yes, sir. So that was where I thought we were, and like I said, am I correct in what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. And I know just based upon some numbers that were kind of thrown out there that it would certainly be an increase to what we were paying now.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have come to $900,000.
You don't know until you try.
Right.
I don't think.
No, and
you subtract 400 to the hospital again, you multiply that
to the outside vendor, then that 900 becomes 500,000.
An additional 500.
And then you don't know what the bids are going to come in. And the only way if we give Dr. Memorial Hospital ambulance service the 250 or the 307 or whatever $1,000, I was trying to buy a year. I'll be gone and somebody else can figure all this out. But I don't know that I'm willing to do that now. I know this year the books are in, they lost $206,000 on the EMS service this year alone. Very similar amount from last year. But if they're only going to get 4 months, I can't vote for that.
Yeah.
If it buys a year to get all these bids done, maybe it's worth it. We have plenty of time then to do it right.
But if I can clarify that exactly and just do it via written communication also, mm-hmm. so that we know exactly what we're talking about, mm-hmm. and then we'll discuss it again. Is that what the board wants to do?
Well, make sure that we get 4 months versus a year. If we can't get a year out of this, then let's just keep our hospital money. My feeling.
Well, one comment that, I mean, what I don't want to do is for them, one of them said the other day, well, we'll just come up there and throw the keys at y'all. And we don't want that to happen. We do have a contract for 2024, but, if we can just clarify and then we can make some decisions then. I don't think we're in a position to make a decision tonight. But we do need to move it along because we owe our citizens the best ambulance service that we can afford.
Right. I'm agreeable to that.
I agree to that too, but let's go ahead and get straight on these bids on taking the power down and know where we stand on the money.
Yeah.
I believe somebody can bid, take them both down, they can do it cheaper. At the same time.
Get them both at one time.
But do you want to make a motion? Or can he make a motion to go out with bids to take the towers down?
Only.
Well, we may be able to obtain quotes. Maybe I can go back and clarify if we need to just get quotes or if we actually need to go out for a formal bid, and we can bring that back to the board.
Well, let's do that then, and get that out of the way because it's pending.
With a price expectation less than $35,000 threshold, you can go out for quotes.
That was my point.
Okay. Is that good? Okay, now. I want to know if there's anybody that's called in who wishes to speak on this topic. Do we have anybody, Teresa?
You have no one with their hand up.
Say again?
No one with their hand up.
Okay, if no one wishes to speak, we're going to move on to talk to Constitutional Officers and Other Governmental Units, number 22. The board to consider appointment of two regular members, one alternate member, one citizen member to the 2020 Value Adjustment Board, VAB, and to appoint chairman of same as agenda clerk. First thing I will do is ask, does anybody want to be a regular member? Okay, I'll volunteer to be a regular member. I need one more person to be a regular member. Who hasn't done it?
I haven't done it, and I will.
Okay. Sean? I need an alternate member.
From the Board of County Commissioners?
Yes.
I'll be an alternate.
And then a citizen member, Wallace Holmes, does anybody know if he still wishes to do that?
I
want to nominate him then. If he doesn't want it, he can get with us.
Well, what's his last name again?
Wallace Holmes. And then we need to appoint a chair to that board. So It could be me or Wallace. I really don't care.
It's got to be you or...
Right, it has to be one of our board.
I'll do it.
Yeah, because I haven't had experience in that situation, so...
Okay, so we've got me as a member and a chair. We've got Commissioner Murphy as a regular member. Commissioner Page as an alternate. And we've got Wallace Holmes as a citizen member. I guess we need to vote on that, right?
Yes.
Does somebody make a motion?
Makes sense.
Okay, we've got a motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 23, the board to consider execution of the annual end-of-year recapitulation of ERA and insolvencies for all 2019 Avalon and non-Avalon roles in Taylor County as presented by Mark Williams, tax collector.
Motion to approve.
Second.
A motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 24, the board to consider extension of debris contract with Crowder Gulf as agended by Christy Anderson, Emergency Management Director. Okay.
Second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any further discussion? All opposed, same sign. Motion approved. Item 25, the board to consider approval of contract between Common Lodge and Monticello and the Taylor County Board of County Commissioners for non-congregate shelter as agreed by the Emergency Management Director.
I move.
I second.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 26, the board.
One second.
I need a mulligan as Commissioner Page. I just wanted to make you aware that when I was reading this contract on the debris thing, that they gave the same prices, but on some there was a 4% increase and then the other was a 41% increase. Did y'all catch that when you went through that?
I didn't catch that. No.
Now understand that...
That's Crowder Gulf we're talking about.
Yes, sir. As I understand it, though, don't we have an alternate on that too?
Yes.
Okay. You got an alternate because this is a contract that hopefully you won't even have to use. And you've got an alternate that you could use. And I don't know that they exactly said which one went 4%, which one went 41%. When I looked at that, I couldn't figure it out. But we might get into a little bit of an argument when and if we decided whether we want to use them or not. You understand what I'm saying?
Did you use Crowder the last time we had a hurricane in Louisiana?
I think we did a good job.
We've been there
since
2014.
I just
want
y'all to be aware of that.
We've got this group at the airport now that serves as a place to stay after hurricane now.
Well, this is for debris removal.
Debris removal, but before it was a lodge visit.
No. That's for non-congregate sheltering.
If you get workers that don't want to sleep all in the same tent.
No. This is for COVID-19. So this is sheltering for, and on item number 25, that's sheltering for citizens who may be exposed to COVID-19 or have COVID-19 symptoms where you have to separate them from the other citizens, where they cannot congregate, basically.
And they guaranteed us 50 rooms.
Yep.
And I understand what I read, that we checked all the local vendors and rooms, and they couldn't find a place that would take this many.
I think Christy exhausted that search.
I read the contract, contract looks fine to me. You know, if you notice, I wrote a letter saying it looked okay to me.
Right, I get it, and this was the best, the best deal.
Right.
I think it's the best rates you could find.
Okay. Oh, mine was 26. I was going to ask the difference between Crowder and, how do you say that, Ceres or Ceres, I think.
Frizzy, are you on the line?
Christy?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's the difference between Crowder Gulf and Ceres Environmental?
Yes, ma'am. Crowder Gulf is our, we signed the contract in 2017. That was our bid committee's first choice. Ceres, which we used here in Hurricane Hermine, was our second choice. That is going to be our backup, which is going to be your next agenda item, I believe, 26.
Yes.
They did a good job, Ceres did. However, Crowder Gulf, their prices have gone up. As you see, they had that change in the contract that they could ask for that difference before they extended it. And even with that price raise, they are still cheaper on most items for hauling, grinding, and burning than the second choice series. And you should have those numbers.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board on item 26? Did I read it? Item 26, the board to consider approval of extension of debris contract with Ceres Environmental as agenda by the Emergency Management Director.
Motion to approve the extension.
Second.
Got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 27. The board to consider ratifying chairman's signature on the FEMA non-conflict shouldering request as agenda by the Emergency Management Director. You want to speak to that, Christy?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. FEMA is requesting from every county this year an approval for non-congregate sheltering. I wanted to let you all know that for non-congregate sheltering, we always use the elementary school for our general population sheltering. We, along with the Department of Health, Red Cross, CERT, we all have, as a school board, have a good relationship. We practiced our sheltering. We exercised it last Saturday. We are going to use the fifth grade wing as an isolation shelter. If someone shows up at our intake area and is symptomatic by a temperature or the questions that we have, they will be sent to the isolation wing. Now, if that fills up, this was the main need for the Monticello contract. However, FEMA wanted to know all of this before they will let us have public assistance reimbursement. We have to have all this in a plan, which we do now. It was approved, and every 30 days, we are going to need this letter from the chair.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the board? Is there a motion to approve?
I move.
Any seconds?
We got a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number 28. The board to consider approval of request for budget amendment to allow the Sheriff's Office to keep reimbursement funds in the amount of $203,357.36 as attended by Sheriff Wayne Padgett. And as Marty Tompkins called in and said they were going to respond to this, I guess they were going to call in, but they had an emergency that they were en route to. Anybody have any questions?
Yes, ma'am. I have something to say on behalf of the sheriff and chief office. They asked that this be conducted the way it was last year on this matter.
Yeah. So this is what we did last year. It's my understanding that the sheriff pays for the off-duty officers out of his budget, and this is a reimbursement. It's a reimbursement for the overtime is what I understand. So any questions, or is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. County staff items number 29. The board to discuss safety measures at Dead Man's Curve on the Beach Road roadway as agenda by Kenneth Dudley, County Engineer.
At the request of the administrator, I put together this agenda item that addresses the long-term and the short-term safety aspects of Dead Man's Curve on the Beach Road. Staff continues to believe that from a long-term perspective, realignment is the safest alternative for that section of roadway. But given the conditions surrounding some of the crash history along that segment, as an interim basis, we have three options that we suggest are worth the board's consideration. The first of those is addressing an upgrade the current standards of the existing signage that's there. The second option is to install the rumble strips, ground and rumble strips for the thermoplastic domes along the edge lines as well as the center line to provide that audible and vibratory alert when you have lane departures. And then the third option is to consider lighting that intersection to provide additional illumination to make the drivers aware of that change in horizontal alignment. I've identified the reasoning behind each of those in the agenda packet that you have, as well as some the pictures and documentation of the standards that I reference in it.
This is a very important subject to me, and it has been for a long time. Not just because of my family members, but because of a lot of other people. And I just want to go over some of the stuff. I know we've talked about, just making the curve, extend the curve at the buy property, have to do the appraisal, purchase the property, and then, redo the road. And I know that DOT said they would help us with that, but of course that was, three years ago or so. And ideally, from what you're saying, Kenneth, and what we think, that's probably the best option. But since we don't have that property just yet, we haven't gone through that, then we talked about putting a traffic signal there last time, I think. I'm not even sure who said put one there, but that had been mentioned. And I've thought a lot about that traffic light, and most of the lights are green unless somebody comes up from a different way to trigger that to make it turn red. And I don't know how many vehicles would trigger that light coming from either Adams Beach or from the dirt road there that would make it turn red. I'm a little bit concerned about that. I think a lot of lighting and a lot of noise makers and anything that we can do. But, and Kenneth, I ran this by you, and don't get mad at me, but I just do want to mention it. And that is that I had thought about a roundabout. And if you have a large enough roundabout there, then nobody would have to stop unless there was a law firm or something or a car coming off of the dirt road. And Commissioner Moody, you had said you were concerned about, the other cars coming, but if you had that roundabout, people either hauling boats or driving
You'd have to slow down to go on that one, but if there's nobody coming, you wouldn't have to stop. So that to me would solve our problem, unless somebody doing all that ran through the roundabout.
There we are.
Well, what happens is, in November, December, late evening, a lot of times early in the morning, the fog is so thick right there, you can't, you would never see a roundabout if you was on the roundabout.
Did you see a red light or a green light?
You could see a red light. They see it on 19, they see it on 98. I mean, a red light would be a lot more to see than a green light or a red light, you know, than see running up in that fog on a roundabout. I mean, I'm just, in a roundabout, I've never been around about with a bunch of lights on it. It's just a little area, you know.
Well, what about if you did, it's just me you talking, if you did put a lot of flashing lights before you got there,
you could do that.
You'd start seeing them before you would see even the light you're talking about, a red light, could be a green light. You know, which has been triggered, so if you have a lot of flashing lights and warning rumble things, and then when you got put around the bat, it just would be a lot more economical way to go. It certainly would slow people down, but go ahead.
Well, a red light, I mean, you got a four-way intersection there.
No, you have a freeway.
You got a freeway.
Well, what about that street road?
Gates Creek is not at the intersection with Adams and the belly.
It can't be put into a four-way intersection right there. In other words, you're going to have them coming off Adams Beach Road with a log truck coming up on a sweeping high corner with a log truck, and then somebody comes around that long corner 60 miles an hour pulling a boat. You're a log truck trying to get up on the road. What I'm saying.
Yes, sir, and I understand your safety concerns, and you actually were one of the reasons that I moved to that as early as I did in looking at the sight distance in there. So my perspective has been the long-term safest alternative is a reorientation, a realignment of that roadway. With that understanding, you know, we move forward with these appraisals, or not appraisals, but identifying how much of the land we need to affect and the discussions with DOT. I did do the investigation of the site distance. So in that, Yates Creek is preserved. Adams Beach comes up and ties into the Yates Creek Road to where you have a single leg that's coming into the middle of that curve because the curve moves to the east. In doing that, you start looking at that as being the conflict, and we need to make sure that you have sufficient sight distance and time to get out and make your turn and not affect the oncoming traffic. So we do it, we look at it for a passenger vehicle, a single unit truck, and then larger semi trucks. And I just happen to have my results here. A passenger vehicle has no problems using the design 60 mile an hour design speed that I chose. Now, that's a 60 mile an hour design, it's 55 posted, just like the rest of the beach road. In looking at the single unit trucks, which is a lot of your UPS, FedEx, that type of trucks that you know we know are gonna go in and out of there, they have no problem for a turning right at a 60 mile an hour speed limit, oncoming traffic, 60 mile an hour. For a single unit to turn left, that's the distance that they have problems with. But the distance that they can see only gets down to a 55 mile an hour oncoming traffic. So what you would expect then is that vehicle coming down, instead of them being able to maintain their speed, they would have to decelerate from a 60 down to a 55. If you look at it now from a semi distance, a semi truck distance, looking at turning right where he's looking back to the north, he can make that turn and have enough time to accelerate for oncoming traffic coming at him at a 60 mile an hour speed. Turning left, which is the longer distance and the shorter visibility, that traffic has to have been down to 45 miles per hour. So there is much more visibility, I think, than you would expect. And I was thinking about it over the weekend and saying, I know there's other areas that are going to be configured just like this. So I went to Puckett Road and Pot Still Road. And if you look at Pot Still Road, The radius of curvature, which is how flat it is, how circular it is, for what we're proposing at Dead Man's Curve is 1,345-foot radius. The radius of curvature at Puckett Road, where Pottsville ties into it, is 819. Mm-hmm. It's almost, it's like 54% tighter than Dead Man's Curve. And looking at the cross slope of that road, the DOT maximum is a 10% super elevation, which is what we use to try to not affect as much property. The cross slope or the super elevation at Puckett Road and Pottsville is 10.3 feet. So if you want to physically see something that is more dramatic than what Dead Man's Curve is going to be, go to Puckett Road and drive it. And if you are comfortable driving through there and feel that vehicles aren't having difficulty maneuvering that intersection, then it wouldn't be, you wouldn't expect to have any difficulty doing the same thing at a gentler curve on the Dead Man's Curve realignment.
That's a good analogy.
That's what I'm just suggesting, is that that's a real world example of what you could expect something less than.
But a phosphorus coming out of the Fox Hill Road up on Puckett Road?
Yes, sir.
Cause the issue, the shift change coming from more electronics down there, I can tell you.
And it probably does, sir, and that's what I'm saying, is that you've got a greater visibility because you've got a flatter curve than that tight curve there. The, you can see really good back to the north, back towards town, at Pottsville.
You can't see the, you can't see the west.
But you can't see to the south, and that's what I noticed. And, you know, that's probably, that to me is a more critical distance on that intersection. So I've given you speeds. It's not near as what I expected. You know, okay, well, these vehicles got to slow down to 30 miles an hour or else we're going to run into the back of them. You know, this is the DOT methodology on trying to figure out sight distance, and I'm telling you that the worst case I saw was a 45 mile per hour. The distance that I'm seeing is 790 feet. That was the tightest visibility difference. A stopping sight distance for that speed of travel is 570. So even in the worst case, you've got enough time and distance to stop if you had to. If something, when they turned out, something went wrong and they didn't continue the way they should.
So you're recommending that we maintain the course of correcting that?
I do, sir. I agree with you.
I do.
But I think there is a lot of sensibility and responsibility in implementing these interim measures.
Right.
Because the lot of the severe tracks, the crashes that we went and looked at, the more severe ones, are from lane departures. So you have these rumble strips that are there, and they're a good distance back, and you have a flashing beacon, and we have some signage that indicates a horizontal change in alignment. What we're suggesting is, at the very first rumble strip, let's start our audible markers there. What that does is that tells them, and if you've ever felt them, you know real quick when you need to get back in your lane, because it feels like it's going to shake your teeth out.
Mm-hmm.
So if we start that, and I'm not talking about just on the sides, because we don't want to cross in the center line either. So if we do it on the white line between the yellows and on the other white line, from this rumble strip all the way around the curve to the other rumble strip, put the signage up, the spacing and the frequency that it's supposed to be, and then light, there's three poles, I looked at them. There's one, a pole on each side of the curve, and there's one pretty close to the center, right by Adams Beach intersection. Let's light those. Let's provide visibility and redundant measures to alert people that something is happening, you're approaching something, and realize that, you know, for the somewhat alert and responsible drivers, you're going to address all of those cases. For those that don't fit in that category, I don't know that there is a measure that you could try to prevent something from happening.
What is the ballpark figure of making the whole curve up, getting behind the property? You got a ballpark figure, or just?
I know that when we, in looking at just the property that's affected and the property appraiser's assessed values, it's about $30,000 on the tax rolls worth of property. We fully know that the Leland Center is asking well more than that. I think that one property is like another say, let's just say $70,000 more than what the assessed value for just the little strip is, because they're not going to sell it unless they sell the whole property. Beyond that, you have at least another $500 or $600 that the DOT, and as of last year, they were still telling us, you get the right of way and we'll give you the money to build it. So that's not a local dollar concern. It is a state dollar concern, but not a local. So I can't see this not money well spent if we can realign this and get rid of that concern from here on out.
Sure.
Because it's, you know, we could look back to 2006 and there was, I think it was 7 records. There was 3 fatalities in that list that didn't have the most recent one because the report's not on there just yet. And it's those 3 were, you know, land partners. And that's what we would move towards trying to control in the interim until we can put a more long-term solution in place.
What would be the cost, Kenneth, to the county for the interim measures that you discussed? By the way.
Yeah, I reached out to DOT last week because if you know, just west of Rocky Creek Bridge, they did that last year, I think it was, is they did a section where they put the ground and rumble strips on the 2 sides in the center. And I reached out to Ms. Sherry and asked her, you know, can I get the contractor's name? Can I at least get some information where I know how much this stuff? She hasn't yet responded back to me. Signs. If we do them in-house, obviously it's a lot cheaper. We just have a little bit of install cost and the cost of signs. If we do it contractually, it's about $300 a pop for each one of those. Lighting would be an ongoing revenue for 3 lights. I think you have a service there for the flashing beacons. I don't know if we can tie that back into it somehow, but y'all did a safety light, a security light, I think, in the boat ramp recently, so I would expect it to be whatever that cost is.
So not astronomical.
I don't think so, no, sir.
And that's a temporary fix.
I only call it temporary because it's until we can put the permanent fix in place.
Agreed.
How many additional Chevron signs did you feel like we need?
It wouldn't surprise me if we needed probably 10. Somewhere in that
neighborhood.
Because it's on the outside of the curb. Okay. I think they've probably got 6 or so there now, some locations. You've got double signs through it and then 1 at each end of it. So somewhere around there.
Yeah, Kenneth, going to Thomasville, after you go through Monticello and before you get to Thomasville, there's a really dangerous curb. Obviously, they've had a lot of accidents there because there are a lot of signs. I'm talking about before you get there, sign after sign after sign after sign. And I don't think that you can, signs are cheap as far as I'm concerned.
The alternative is much more expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, so.
What I'm suggesting is, you know, you saw a diagram here, but Johnson Strickland wrote, when DOT resurfaced that last year before last, I think it may have been, what was the first response most people said? Holy cow, look at all the signs on all those sharp curves, because that is the current standard. And that's the kind of density of signage that we would expect on this one, because you're getting all the way down to, if you look at the graphics, I think the lowest one was 15 miles per hour less, and it was like 40-foot spacing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tight.
Mm-hmm. I like the signage for right now. I don't like the idea of having to pay quadruple or whatever for property.
Well, all I would say is Mr. Conrad provided Luana and I some background on the proper methodology to follow for this type of acquisition and the appraisal concepts. And in there, you know, it makes a lot of reference to impartial appraisals and the value of the property and what you can do if you see that appraisal about or that that purchase price exceeding that, those situations where it's still in your hands to kind of make that choice. My suggestion to you is that perhaps that you give, give him a direction to kind of take the lead on securing those appraisal services so that you know, we can kind of be set apart from that process, and then, you know, we kind of pick it up after that point to where the appraisals are in place, and then we can kind of facilitate the negotiations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can get appraisals through all that, but if somebody, you know, feels like they want a certain amount, and you can't make them budge.
And you have
eminent domain.
Huh?
Eminent domain.
Well, I know that. Well, how much does it cost you to go through eminent domain? But I don't
know. Oh, I'm so expensive, you don't know how.
Well, I would say that there's other, that it seemed to be some possibilities in there prior to going the course of eminent domain.
Yeah.
That I think Mr. Conrad could probably enlighten you on to say that, look, just because it comes back and you say it's worth 100 and they want 200, that's not the end all for it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, something has to be done. And I think starting out with all that you've just described tonight, with the lighting and all the formal scripts and all of that, I think that that's a good beginning. Because it makes me feel better. I know people will think we're doing everything we can leading up to what we ultimately would like to do, which is to straighten that curve out more. So if it takes us, to, in my opinion, getting an appraisal, and then if later on if negotiations don't work, and this is definitely a safety hazard for everybody, and if we have to put in stronger things to do, then we may have to do that.
Yes,
don't want to, but...
Yeah, it's the last resort.
Yeah. What's the pleasure of the board?
I'm in favor of getting Conrad to go ahead and proceed with what he needs to do in order to see if we get that besides going to the domain.
And in the meantime,
I'm in favor of doing that immediate check that we got.
So would you like to put that into a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Well, I'll make that motion.
Okay.
So we have a motion to follow the recommendation of the county engineer at this current time period to put rumble strips to light up three poles. Okay. And that would carry us into a further process of realigning that roadway. Right.
So that's the motion I second.
Okay.
I'd like to ask one more question before we get through this. Why couldn't you make that a four-way stop there with a red light? I mean, the 8th Creek Road could alter just a little bit right there if you were going to buy a property. Buy that little corner right there and just line the 8th Creek Road up with the crossroad.
It's still only a 3 because a 4-way would be one on the other side of the road.
Do what now?
If you tie the 8th Creek into Adams Beach, you still only have a 3-way intersection. You got a main line road and an intersecting side street. That's all you would have.
Next Creek Road comes a little north of, a little east of the intersection.
Yes, sir.
Couldn't you alter it over and have it come straight into the intersection?
So you're saying you would have two roads coming in at an angle and then the main road that occurred?
No. Next Creek Road, you could turn just before you get out to the highway and angle over a little bit and come up to the red light right there, straight into the red light. All four lanes would be coming looking at each other. I mean, I know you'd have to move to the southwest a little bit with the Yates Creek Road.
I guess it's hard for me to get past perceiving Beach Road as the main roadway. That's the main line. And then the other roads being intersecting side streets.
Right.
And in reality, the way the reason for controlling or stop controlling or a traffic signal at an intersection, which is in the MUTS manual, is that you are making an attempt to address issues and conflicts with vehicle and pedestrian movements. Those are largely in part turning movements or delays from side roads not being able to go because the mainline traffic is so congested or dense. We don't have those types of issues at that location. So what you saw in my write-up was the balance of that review then centers on crashes. And it looks for 5 crashes within a 12-month time frame. And we only had 2 in 1 12-month time frame. And I did it as rolling 12 months to try to encapsulate as much as I could. So the scenario that you would use a traffic signal for doesn't exist there. We don't have those issues. And what DOT and the federal requirements caution you is that a traffic signal is not going to stop crashes. When you use it for a situation that it's not intended for, you actually are going to create issues. So they worry us to not use measures that are not appropriate.
In other words, red light's more dangerous than a long curve, what they're saying.
A red light is more dangerous. A red light creates more problems when you don't have the problems that the red light is intended to solve. That's about a bureaucratic as I say that.
Okay.
And that's what I put in the write-up. I tried to give the reference. Literally, when she told me that, I did this. I said, what is the purpose of a traffic signal? The first hyperlink with the DOT, and they've got a frequently asked questions segment there. And I want to say it was the 5th one down. And it tells you, this is what a light for. Is when you can't move cars through, or you can't move people through, or you have these T-bone type instances, then we need to stop traffic. And if you don't have that scenario, you are looking to create more issues that you're going to have to deal with.
Okay,
so right now we have a motion and a second on the table to follow the engineer's recommendation of more lighting and rumble strips and noise makers and to instruct
and improve signage.
And improve signage.
Yes, sir.
Lots of it. And then to ask our attorney
move forward with securing the appraisals.
With the appraisal. Go ahead and see about the appraisal. That's the motion right now. And we've got a motion and a second. Any further conversation about that? Okay, if not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, Kenneth.
Yes, ma'am.
Kenneth, the surveys are complete.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so the surveys are done. So we have accomplished that.
Good. Okay. Moving along to item 30. The board to consider approval of the first and second of 3 amendments being submitted to the Gulf Consortium for inclusion in the state expenditure plans from the SEP as agenda by the grant writer. The first the first amendment to be considered is that of the purchase of spring water, and the second is the renovation of Hodges Park. Now, I have to say that, I don't know about y'all, I'm a messenger. I've had some people to question how much Spring Warrior would actually help our current situation. They pointed out that there's not ever going to be a lot of parking, and you're going to be inhibited what size boats can go in and out. So I'm a messenger. This is what has been said to me. So. Commissioner Moody, this is one that you really have been very interested in, so would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I would. There's a world of luck to use Springwood Ramp. And if it's sold to an individual and the ramp goes away, that's just going to put more pressure on our ramp. And I would say 50% of the people when trout go biting in the spring and in fall, they lay cheating beads and deeper beads and Ezel and Dark Island everywhere, and they go up there from Spring Ward to fish. That's the best fishing on that whole coast between Rock Island and Jeffo is the best trout and red fishing in the county. And having that ramp right there at that good fishing area, it would be a blessing to take the county.
Okay, so it doesn't really alleviate any of the problems that we have in terms of
needing more boat ramp, but it ensures that the people that do use it, which you say are a lot, would be, there would be no chance then that it would be sold to an individual and they would not be able to use it. Am I correct?
That's what I'm hearing, you know. And this right there, where everybody fishes, I mean, that's a fishing point in Taylor County, right there up in Rock Island, the Yellow, and the Red Trout and Redfish on the coast. Wouldn't you say that?
That's right, that's where my son George goes. He catches some bigs.
And that's the, I hate to see that ramp go away, because that puts them people in Keaton Beach. That'd be more pressure there, you know.
Is there an appraisal needed so that, you know, we're purchasing an appropriate price?
Hey, everybody, can you hear me? Melody on the line.
Hold on just a second.
Melody, are we required to?
Yes.
Yeah, we, right.
Yes, we are required to have an appraisal, and we can only pay appraised price. And we're required to have what is called a yellow book appraisal, not a regular appraisal, it's a detailed appraisal, kind of like what Florida Community Trust does.
Okay.
The appraisal is the requirement. And for the cost I put in, I went with a very high amount to make sure that we were covered when we did the SEP amendment, because I don't want it held up that we didn't put in enough money and can't move forward with it, and you've got to wait another 6 months.
Thank you. Any questions you may
have? Now, have we had any study put in place, Jim, that is going to prove that that would alleviate the pressure off of Keaton Beach and St. Hatchie? Do we know for sure if we ascertain this property and put 25 rig slips in there, is that still going to solve the issue that we have down there? And I understand people use it.
It couldn't hurt it. It would help it in the fall when the trout are by.
Sure will.
You know, a little bit. I don't know how many parking spaces you can get on that property. And
there could be, I've seen at least 45 or 50 trucks and trailer there.
Okay. Well, half of those were local residents that used, say, Keaton Beach. Put in there, that takes that much pressure off. Okay. It would help some, I would think.
It's not a permanent alleviation. It's only a temporary alleviation when the population grows here, say 10 years from now. You know, it's going to be an obsolete project in 10 years from now.
And you got a bunch of people that live right there and pay taxes at Spring Warrior.
Understood.
From Florida and Georgia, and a lot of people come there every weekend from Georgia and everywhere else, their own places there. And if that boat ramp goes away, they just put them out of a boat ramp altogether. You put them back there out of a boat ramp too. That's another reason I wanted the county to acquire that boat ramp for the people that pay taxes right there at Spring Wood. You know, that would give them a public ramp.
Let's look at what the appraisal gives us. Let's look at that first. I think we need to look at that.
Well, we need to, but we don't need to get it off the plate, do we?
No.
Is time of the essence here, Lauren, of getting this done, this S&P?
I would think, I mean, not necessarily. I think we were trying to get as many of our amendments in at one time, so we were trying to bundle our amendments because the Gulf Consortium doesn't constantly, I mean, there's a process you have to go through once you're submitted to the Gulf Consortium. So what we wanted to do was bundle our SEP amendments and get at least these two in so we could start that process, because I would think approval could be months away.
Just from what I think I'm hearing here. I know that we've got a commissioner who wants to go ahead, we've got a commissioner that wants to go ahead. Commissioner Dibbs, where are you at with this?
You know, those 35 or 40 people that both questions got down there, if that was at Keaton Beach, that would be impossible to even conceive. But even though it's secret, you know, all this stuff is secret. Well, it don't be, I mean, you don't have problem at the boat ramp, they can't beach all the time.
That's right, we don't need no more problems to keep the beef with.
Yeah.
We need to spread them out as much as possible.
And I talked to somebody who wants some property down there, they were willing to let us use some of that property down there. It's kind of
used. One owner owns that property.
Yeah.
Or it changed hands. One person owned that for 2 or 3 acres.
Right.
And so you wouldn't be dealing with just one landowner.
So are you in favor of going ahead and with a purchase of Spring Warrior?
Oh yeah, we can get.
Okay, and I think I am too. So with that being said, I don't know, Commissioner Murphy.
Well, let's look and see if the satisfaction of the appraisal is feasible for us to make that decision.
Well, what we have before the board is approval to submit an SEP amendment.
Correct.
Yep. If that is approved, then after that we would submit a grant submission. So this is just to amend the SEP, the state expenditure plan, to be able to move forward with these projects.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 3A, the board to discuss possible grant submissions to phase 2 and phase 3 of the FDEO rebuild Florida CDBG mitigation as the CDBG-MIT program as agenda by the grants writer. And that's 3 phases.
That's
right.
We've already submitted phase 1
for the generator. Now for phase 2 is funding that can be used for planning and technical assistance. Does that mean that's for engineering for Kenneth's department, or what does that mean?
I would think if the board would
go ahead, Melvin.
It is to do a county-wide feasibility type study so that we can pick up the entire county. Because HMPG, where we did the flooding and drainage through that program, that's only on the coastline, and we know there's a countywide problem.
Yes.
And with this, we can do countywide. And the plan, my plan is, and I hope y'all will approve it down the road, is there's a new grant coming out called GIP, which can be used for the entire county to whatever comes out of the feasibility study and the recommendations of that, there will be money available where we could actually complete those projects. But to be eligible to apply for that down the road, you do have to have a completed feasibility and planning study.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. And then phase 3, for miscellaneous projects to prevent future damage related to hurricanes and tropical storms. And so what, Melody, would be an example of that?
Well, what I would like to use the money for on that is right now, on the HMPG grant that was submitted a few months ago, the county has a match of $409,000. And we can apply for this grant to cover the match from the HMPG.
For that way,
the board doesn't have to come up with a match, and at this time, we don't know of any other funding source that would cover that match.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Now, with that said, if you have other projects that can prevent future damage, and Lawanda had mentioned to me a couple weeks ago that the jail was in need of a roof, you may want to consider using that grant too, and you can submit as many applications as you want to cover the cost of that roof. That's an option she mentioned to me too, because I know that would be a huge expense for you. But it's to hard structures or cheap things prevent future storm damage.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would just say that in the documents that I read, I thought it was a little more broad about the possibility of the various projects that we could consider, more so than just a countywide stormwater study.
Did you hear that, Melody?
No, I couldn't hear what he said. What did he say?
Come here, Kenneth, and tell me. We had a submission that I'm considering.
That's fine. I put my suggestions in writing of 8 different projects that in my reading of the documents that were submitted for this grant, that would be possibilities for it. The stormwater mitigation stuff was only one.
Yeah, he's saying that he thought it was broader than that, and then he had some projects that he had put in also that he thought would fit under that, other than what you just described.
For phase 2 or phase 3? Because phase 2 is like a planning and technical assistance grant only.
Hold on.
Yeah, I was trying to find the actual documents of it that I received.
He's looking, hold on.
Okay.
Do you think you were looking at the phase 3 documents or phase 2?
I thought it was the phase 2, but I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not seeing it right here, but I mean, in reading the documentation is how I did the list, and as a matter of fact, the first list, after reading it, I only had 4 items, and then after thinking about it, I went back and added 8 more. One of those was the flood mitigation project, but in the infrastructure items that they said this could be used to address, there was one of them even was bridge replacement.
Bridge replacement.
And immediately, what do you think of? Green bridge. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a possibility. One of it was infrastructure related to, I want to say it was pedestrians. So I'm thinking down at the Steamhatchee Boat Ramp, let's put in a pedestrian island.
Did you hear that, Melody?
I've already gave her all this.
Okay. He says he's already given you all.
I gave them both this, you know, the county administrator and Melody. I gave them the list of my suggestions, and I'll lush after this because that was my suggestion for what I was perceiving were based on my reading of the eligibility requirements. And so
I think the question was, is that, and maybe there was a misunderstanding, was this grant is for planning and feasibility. So Melody, did you understand that? I mean, do you feel like the items that Kenneth forwarded to us is something that we would need planning and feasibility? Is that what you're suggesting, Kenneth?
The one that I'm talking about is called, I'm about to look. This is the G, and maybe I am thinking of, I'm thinking of a GIP.
GIP, right. Yes, GIP is the upcoming grant. That funding cycle is not what we're discussing right now. We're discussing CDD, MIT, phase 2 and 3.
Yeah, this one is a CDBG MIT, but it's the suffix on the end of it is an infrastructure program grant. So if that, and apparently I have made one mistake with this, so that's enough. But I have a list of 8 items that are eligible for consideration.
Okay, you got a list of 8 we want them considered then. Right?
Right.
So what do we need to do?
But are you saying...
I meant for the other one.
For the other one, not for this.
Okay, for
right, this. Because this is just for planning and feasibility. And the only project that we were aware of that the board had expressed an interest in as far as planning and feasibility was a countywide planning or countywide drainage study, which we've been discussing for quite some time. So that was why we were wondering if the board wanted us to move forward with that, understanding that the submission deadline is the end of the month.
So phase two, you're suggesting go full countywide. Phase three was the match portion of the Schenectady.
Right. But then, Melody, the additional grant that you feel like we are eligible for, one of Kenneth's projects could possibly be considered for that. Am I understanding?
Yeah.
Okay.
And keep in mind, on this grant, there's no match due from the county. We are not required to provide any kind of match.
So the GIP phase of this is when we could consider one of Kenneth's projects, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So we're all on the same page.
Yeah, I just
go ahead.
Actually, some of Kenneth's projects could be considered for the phase three CDBG MIT, where we're submitting for the match for the Schenectady stormwater, because those are general projects. And we can come back to the board and have that on the first meeting in August if they want to do it, or the meeting in August. If they want to do an additional project, because it's like a miscellaneous general project, so we could probably pick up one of his there. Keep in mind, this is a pretty time-consuming grant, but we can come back to the board in August and still make the deadline to do an additional project if we should choose to.
Kenneth, one thing that I don't want to lose sight of is I know that we talked a great deal about Schenectady, but we also have four other districts. And I know for my district, District 4, and you know where my flooding issues are, and I want to make sure that my district is not left out and that everything is set for one district. And I think other commissioners have issues in their districts, so I don't want to lose sight of that and put all our money into one district, one pot.
I'm on you to that. Young guy, I love
it. Yeah, and remember when we stood up here and we even began the discussions about the Schenectady area, we said that would be our initial.
Right.
And then we knew from all of the response that we had during all the high water events where those problem areas are, and then we would start leapfrogging to the other places. So yeah. We're not forgetting about that.
Yeah, okay. I know you're not. I just want to make sure because, you know, our constituents are just as important as the rest of them.
I want to say one thing on that. Schenectady, this is no kind of talk down there. It's been flooded twice in the last 40 years. Your district, my district, my constituents, and the Dempsey district has been flooded a bunch of times in the last 4 years.
In the last 10 years?
Well, in the last 10 years, at least two times. We might be fixing to look at another. We're right here at the edge. We got a hurricane stall out here right now. If it did, with the water table the way it is today, we'd have another issue.
Another 10 inches would have it.
And Schenectady would too.
Well, do we want to keep moving in the same direction?
We need to go in the direction, but we don't need to start off spending money in Schenectady before we spend in this that's been behind for years and years. That's me. That's the way I feel.
That's the way I feel.
I do too. So that should do it.
About a speeding new.
And we took that into consideration when we made the recommendation that we utilize these funds for a countywide study because that had been the direction from the board previously.
Okay.
Okay, is there a motion to approve?
I made a motion.
Okay.
We got a motion by Commissioner Murphy and a second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Item 31, the board to consider adoption of authorizing resolution and approval of inter-local agreement with the North Florida Workforce Consortium as agenda by the county administrator. Any questions on that from anybody?
I make a motion that we ask our attorney to, is this the one that has a resolution?
Yes, sir.
Authorizing resolution, reading resolution by title.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, go ahead.
This is another one that doesn't have a title, so I'm reading the first one. I don't read the first paragraph, just take a minute. And y'all have done this before, this is a re-up, is what it is. Whereas Board of County Commissioners of Jefferson, Madison, Hamilton, Swanee, Lafayette, and Taylor Counties have joined together to create the North Florida Regional Workforce Consortium by interlocal agreement and to create a local workforce area to provide workforce services to their citizens under the Workforce Investment Act, WIA. So what it is, it's a resolution for y'all to sign this agreement, which the other
Okay, thank you. Now, is there a motion to approve the resolution?
Motion to approve the resolution.
Second.
We got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Yeah.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. General business number 32. The board to discuss drafting orders to require facial coverings inside public buildings as agenda by Commissioner Moody.
Okay, I put this on the agenda to get feedback from my constituents in other areas on this thing. And I had at least 60 people that I talked to, and I've had two that really wanted to have masks everywhere. The other 48 or 49 of them don't want no mandatory mask in no kind of way. It's up to the people to wash their own, they say it's up to the people to put on their own hand sanitizer, wash and put on their own mask, and be responsible for themselves. And I feel that way myself. You know, I had to put it on the agenda to get feedback from my constituents. Now y'all can speak to y'all constituents and we'll go from there. There's a big movement in Taylor County not to wear masks because people might have enough stuff put down their throat so far. You know.
Let me ask you a question because the way I'm interpreting number 32, it says, at your request, it's saying here, the board should discuss drafting an ordinance to require facial coverings inside public buildings.
Right.
So you're asking for us to draft an ordinance to require?
Right.
So you're asking for face masks to be worn?
I asked that because I have constituents that wanted me to ask that question.
Right.
And are interested in us doing that. But I'm telling you, two out of 48 or 49 maybe 51 people I talked to.
So my question to you, I mean, I'm just looking at the way it's worded.
Yeah, I understand.
Right.
That's the way it was brought to me. You know, they wanted to have, so when you went in a 7-Eleven or you went in Winn-Dixie or you went in Walmart, for us to be a mandatory for you to have to wear a mask.
Well, I'm just trying to read it as if I saw it in the court of law.
I'm an
attorney or something. So, I mean, but it sounds to me that you were promoting wearing masks in public.
No, I was bringing it to the table
for discussion
as a suggestion to get people's input on it, and I have got the input.
Okay. Well,
and honestly, if I want to wear a mask in Walmart, I'm going to wear one. And anybody else wants to wear one in the gas station or wear gloves to pump your gas, they need to do that. I mean, people in Taylor County just do not want to be forced to wear a mask or be fined for not wearing one.
I agree with that part.
Okay.
But I'm just trying to say the way it was worded, it looks as if you're trying to promote wearing a mask countywide.
Yeah, he's already, you know.
He's already.
Here, that's fair.
The way it was worded.
I agree with you that, you know, you're on your own. We made the precedence and do that for government buildings. That portion's okay to protect our caves, okay? But we have no jurisdiction to make anybody do anything in that manner.
I understand that, and law enforcement don't want to have to be out there trying to make people wear a mask.
They can't.
I mean, that's just, they got plenty to do without having that issue.
I agree.
But now, I would follow constituents of mine directing to ask that question.
Okay.
And I did, and I got a lot of feedback on it, and I'm glad I got the feedback.
Okay.
Yeah.
My thing always been, every grown adult needs to be responsible for himself.
Right.
We've been told to practice safe distance. We've been told that it was a good thing to wear a face mask. I do. I practice safe distance. I wear a face mask, and I try to keep a flat. The thing that I have for these public buildings, I go in the bank and they got shields there, and I go into the grocery store, they got shields. I think it becomes part of their responsibility to do the shielding for their own employees. I know the one that think a lot about employees, you don't want to pay, I don't either. But I think going, saying everybody should wear a face mask is one of the biggest problems.
Because what's next?
Huh?
What comes after that?
What?
No, I mean, if we make it mandatory for people to wear a face mask,
I think I'm right there yet.
I know what's next. So I agree with you that we shouldn't even go in that direction at all, period.
After getting the picture, now if I had 48 people tell me they wanted to have a countywide mask, then, you know, and then I'd have listened to them for another week, and then I'd been ready to make a motion to do that, but constituents as a whole do not want that.
And I agree with that.
Thank you.
So it's clarified.
Madam Chair, let me share a few people that I've talked to, and talked to several on the phone, talked to some of the 10 people who go to children in school, and they were the first ones that got my attention. We are adamantly opposed to you passing an ordinance that's going to require a small child in school, kindergarten, first, second, third grade, to wear a mask all day. Well, if this thing had gained the support of the board, I was going to insist maybe we exclude schools, because I'm sure the school board and the superintendent are going to make some hard, fast rules about how you, when you wear a mask. I've read where some schools, grades kindergarten through maybe fourth grade, you don't have to wear a mask. And you get up about fifth grade through high school, you have to wear the mask. So let's leave the school thing out of this. I've had several people call me, and I got several people that I've talked to on the streets. Those that I've talked to just bump into. Don't make us folks in Tampa County wear no masks. We're not going to do it. Same thing Jim's heard.
Right.
And then you've got the militants, I'll call them, for lack of a better word. They want everybody to have to wear a mask 24/7 wherever you go. And I can't support that.
Neither can I.
Well, I've had three of my constituents said, please pass the requirement that you have to wear a mask, and then I've had many more than that said that we don't want to wear a mask. So, you know, I'm just really sad that the governor and we were so eager in the first place to jump ahead and open everything up, and now we're to the point where we've got more than 10,000 new cases every day. As a matter of fact, on Saturday alone, we had 11,450 new positive cases. Now, some people's telling me it's a hoax. Maybe it is, I don't know. I find that hard to believe, but that seems, I don't think it's a hoax, but there's nothing to it. But I do know that there are people that are getting it and they're buying from it, so I'm not quite sure about the hoax. But I do personally wish that more people would take responsibility on their own and wear a mask, because it feels like if you don't wear a mask, you don't care about yourself, and you sure don't care about me, and you, and you, and you. And I don't want to shove it down people's throat either. I mean, there's already four people that have said that they don't want that, and from the people that's calling us, they don't want that. So I'm not going to vote to make it mandatory to wear a mask, but I just wish people would wear their mask. And I wish the governor would step in too. A lot of other governors throughout the United States are taking steps to make their states more safe, but ours has decided not to do that. So it seems like to me that the whole state would be better, but anyway, that's my feel on it. So, is there a motion? Or not, I guess there's no motion to go with this mandatory thing, so bottom line, we're not going to do that. I will ask for this, has anybody called in that wishes to speak to this item? I mean, we've already made a decision, we're not going to make it mandatory, but is there anybody that would like to speak that would like to see it mandatory?
Yes, number 7366.
Number 7366. If you wish to speak, you can speak now.
Good evening. Hi.
If you'll state your name.
Called,
state your name and address, ma'am.
Sure. My name is Ashley McCormick. I'm at 511 Dixit Boulevard. So I'm going to actually stand on the unpopular opinion side. I also do not, like everyone else has indicated, do not want to be mandated to wear masks. However, I do choose to wear masks. But I want to be very clear when I heard some of these commissioners saying that it's, you know, the duty of the person, or the person should be accountable for their own health. I want to make it very clear that when you're talking about masks, you're not protecting yourself. The masks only protect the people that you potentially are exposing, and that's why it's so important for majority to wear the mask, because it is proven with solid evidence that it decreases the chance of transmission if both parties are wearing a mask by 50-80%. And saying that, how that happens is I've heard it all, I've read it all, I'm on Facebook, I practice medicine every single day, I have people in the office, they say, well, how can something breathe out, but not, I mean, how can something come in but not be breathed out, and the particles are smaller of the virus? While this is true, the particles are smaller than the mask, the filter, the virus itself does not come out without having respiratory droplets next to it, which makes it larger, which is why the mask can filter it from going out. Now, let's say that people are not wearing a mask, and when you filter out by coughing, sneezing, whatever you're doing that may bring respiratory droplets out of your mouth, they start out warmer, but the farther they go, they get smaller and smaller and smaller. This is why masks will allow them in, but not out. They start out very large, so they are caught by the mask, by the user, not aware. However, the person that's not wearing the mask will get a smaller droplet, or even if they're wearing a mask and there's droplets in the air, these droplets, by the time it's just small enough, that it will go through. We've already indicated that people cannot be accountable for other people's health, which has been proven by people continuously congregating, continuously, you know, not heeding to the warning. I'm not asking for people to mandate face masks. I'm just asking for the right information to be put out there that you are not protecting yourself by these face masks that they are promoting. You're protecting others. And so the same people that are saying, I don't want to wear a face mask, are people that are spreading it to the people that are wearing a face mask. So each one of you, y'all done your due diligence, are in the room right now, you're wearing the face mask, and you're protecting the other person. But if one person in that room has a face mask off, and they have COVID, then you're potentially exposing each one of you that might be wearing a mask. I know that, you know, that y'all are having to make hard choices during this pandemic, and the alternate is that we continue to see the number rise. We continue to see the hospitalization rise, where we went from like 6 2 weeks ago at the hospital ICU, or hospitalization, to 47 today. We have zero ICU beds in this whole community, 22,000 people. If anyone needs an ICU bed, and any of these hospitals in Brown County are on the verge person, we potentially have a bed that cannot be found, and therefore that person should die. That's not the code. That's of any medical illness that requires immediate assistance. So I just want y'all to all be very aware that this does not protect you. The washing of hands is, I'm sure, that helps you, but the mask wearing is for the other people. Thank you for letting me talk, and like I said, any commissioner would like to reach out, I would be glad to give you an outstanding number of evidence. I know election year's coming up. Please don't do this based on popular opinion. Please make educated decisions on behalf of the Taylor County citizens. Even for those that say, I do not want to mandate masks, please make sure that you're looking out for the majority of people's health. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. But actually, the N95 mask now does protect you, right?
Thank you. The N95 dose mask does protect you. However, the ones with the valve will allow you to affect others. So if you're wearing it, the ones with the valve will actually put your particles out and keep theirs from coming in. However, the N95 surgical mask, due to a shortage of PPE, and I know in my office we've seen an increased amount of people that require COVID testing over the past couple weeks. We're running low on PPE, just like everyone else, so we're trying to, you know, make it last as far as we can. The testing here in the community and availability has let down, so we're testing a whole lot more in our office, even for people who aren't patients. We're trying to get people so they can, you know, adhere to quarantine like they are supposed to. And so what I'm saying is, please say those for the medical people. A mask, if everyone is wearing a mask in a place they're going, then you will be much safer. So these stores that are mandating masks, kudos to you all. These businesses, kudos to you all. You will have less employees out with COVID, thanks to your diligence.
Okay, thank you. It's always good to hear from a medical person. I appreciate you calling in, Ashley.
Anybody? Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else, Teresa?
Trey Blue, 1592.
1592.
Mm-hmm.
Caller 1592. You may speak now. State your name and address.
This is Benjamin Blue, 1968 Salmer Lane. The board has already made their decision, but I'd just like to air it out that, you know, wearing a mask is literally the bare minimum that any of us have been asked to do to help reduce the spread of this virus. It's not an especially difficult thing to do. It doesn't hurt anybody to do it. Most of us who are still working right now, or who are blessed enough to still be working right now, have already been asked to do that during our work day. So I would just encourage everybody to do that. It's probably the best option we have right now for protecting our neighbors and our economy here. So thank you.
Thank you for calling. Okay, there are no more callers at this time. I appreciate the people that called in. Okay, we're going to move along to under county attorney items number 33. The county attorney to discuss Dream Defenders versus Dana Sutherland et al. Resolution of Life. Did I say that right?
Yes, ma'am. Essentially, the only reason I put this on was because our carrier sent us, if you tried to read that letter, that's the longest letter of reservation of rights I've ever seen in the years I've been an attorney. And essentially what they're saying is, we're going to defend you, but we're not going to pay if you have to pay. We're reserving the right not to pay. And we get those letters all the time from the carriers, and then they end up paying. And these lawsuits are voter rights lawsuits that have been filed in our state. They're suing all 67 counties, mm-hmm. and also the canvassing boards also. So I just want to let y'all know that that they're reserving that. And you know, I don't know what the outcome of these lawsuits are going to be. I don't know whether they're going to finish prior to the November elections or not, but I'll tell you this, that your supervisor elections, Dane is right on top of it, and I get a copy of everything that's being done. So if something bad happens, I'll sure let you know. This is not on top of y'all's list. You know, and it's important. Voting is very, very important. Everybody needs to vote, and everybody needs to be able to vote too. And that's what these are about. So
thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Item 34, the county attorney to discuss draft ordinance establishing a special event permit regulating concerts as agenda by the county attorney. Is there a motion to read by title only?
No, ma'am.
No.
What you want to do is if you look at it, if you want to advertise, this is not passed tonight.
No, I know that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I just didn't know if we wanted to read what the ordinance was about.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I got too excited.
But that's okay. I think it's that's quite all right. It pretty much says what it says, but I when I read over it, and I'm sure that you got a real good answer for this. Section 1B mentions 50 people, and Section 7 mentions 1,000 attendees. You know, with all that hereby and whereas and therefore and all that stuff that you watch, sometimes it's I need a little interpretation.
Okay. If you read through this, it's very similar to the mud box ordinance. You know, but I went through it slowly, and you know, that it's not as restrictive for a smaller concert as it is for a bigger concert. That's the answer to your question. Because it's certainly more expensive to put on a bigger concert than it is a smaller concert. But I think what this does is it achieves what you were requesting with regard to the concert. I think it'll work. Yes, ma'am, I think it'll work.
Okay, but my constituents would be, some of them would be very angry at me if it didn't
work.
Take care of what they needed to take care of.
Well, now, listen, you need to tell your constituents now, if it's just like the mud bog thing. You know, we didn't know when we did that mud bog ordinance whether it was going to be favorable or not. And what's happened is, you know, we had a lot of mud bogs, had a lot of folks coming in and spending money and so forth and so on. And your constituents might find that if somebody meets all the criteria in the ordinance, then they might be able to put on a concert.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see about that one, dear.
Yeah.
Now let us know.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we need a motion to have a public hearing.
To advertise for a public hearing.
Motion to have a public hearing.
Second. Motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say aye. Motion carries. Item 35, the county attorney to discuss draft golf cart ordinance for Keaton Beach. And again, I guess we don't need to read anything about that. What we're trying to do is to move the golf cart sign down to the Ice House.
700 feet.
Is that what?
700 feet.
No. Yeah, because there's a lot of people that want to drop their golf cart down there and pick up ice. And so that's what this is. Anybody got anything that they need to add before we make a motion to have a public hearing?
You're going to also have to translate the speed limits.
Right, exactly.
Speed limits?
Yes, speed limits will have to be adjusted a little bit.
We adjusted them back one time. Before originally they were down and then put them back up, you know.
That's called it went clean all the way down to Gibson Road.
Right, right.
Which was, you haven't had some calls about that.
Right.
People have been slowed down way up the road.
I've had calls from both sides of that. First conversation I had with the preacher at Blue Creek, he said, why in the world have you got people 25 miles an hour for another 2 miles before we get to Gibson Road? And then my family that's got a place out of Gibson Road and their children are riding golf carts. But I can't let that affect my decision. out of house, I can live with that. And they try to get me to believe, well, if you're going to change the speed limits to the ice house, go ahead and put it back against the road. So, can't believe everybody.
Well, I think that the changing it to the ice house will service a lot more people versus moving it down from one family.
That's right.
And I understand they want to buy their golf cart. I want to buy mine around the Cedar Island and the Dark Island too, but I can't do it.
Where you ride it?
Well, you might just have to ride up and down that little road to the boat ramp, check on that. In fact, I'll just park. But yeah. Now, if we do this, we can ride it to the ice house. Okay. Is there a motion to have a public hearing?
I'm ready to be able.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Gibbs, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 36. The board to consider adoption of resolution to set the speed limit on Donaldson Bridge Road as prepared by the county attorney. Is there a motion to read this resolution by title only?
Motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Where it has come to the attention of the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County that the speed limit on the following described road needs to be set, and it's Donaldson Bridge Road, 25 miles an hour.
Okay, so the next proper thing to do would be to have a public...
No, ma'am, this is a resolution.
This is it.
This is it.
Okay, good.
Motion to approve the resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion?
Do it by roll call.
Okay.
Commissioner Moody?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Commissioner Page?
Aye.
Commissioner Spiegel?
Yes.
Commissioner Dent?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Aye.
You got it.
Good, thank you.
I've got one other thing with regard to ordinances, if y'all don't mind.
Sure.
I was instructed to do an ordinance on the parking I've done it, and I've sent it. I haven't gotten any comments on it, because I sent it to the sheriff and the clerk. The clerk called me. But I would request y'all go ahead and put it on the agenda for the next meeting. I didn't want y'all to think I didn't do it, because this was my month of doing ordinances.
I believe you've got that in my box.
Sir?
I believe you've got that in my box.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to let y'all know this has been done. Now, whether you're going to like it or not, that's another story.
Okay. I know some people that didn't actually have their meeting with Chuck this weekend. Take it pretty unhappy about it. Item 37 under County Administrator item will discuss and consider approval of the Taylor County CARES Act funding agreement.
Back the second week of June, we received notice that Taylor County would receive their allocation of the CARES Act funding. We have, which is the agreement that you have in your packet. And I've been present on several conference calls that Florida Association of Counties and Small County Coalition have hosted. And just want to bring to your attention the guidance that we are receiving from Florida Association of Counties and Small County Coalition. First of all, our share for the initial 25% allocation is $940,906. This is 25% of our entire allocation. So our entire allocation is $3.7 million and some change. The guidance that we've received from FAC, number one, is to follow Treasury guidelines. We're in a period of clarification. Recipients will be open to scrutiny to ensure compliance. So in other words, especially the first 25% allocation, we will receive once we transmit our signed application. From what I understand, there's not there's not entire clarification at this time, but what we are being told is to be very careful how we spend the money, because it is subject to be repaid. And what the state will do is they can and they will withhold revenue sharing. So they're giving us a large sum of money with not a lot of clarification, I would say, at this time, and saying follow the guidelines or you will have to pay it back, which makes me a little anxious about how we need to proceed. The funding agreement is through Department of Emergency Management, but it's not an emergency it's not emergency management funds necessarily. It's to be used for items related to COVID-19 and possibly economic development. Some of the guidance that we've received is that we can use this for reimbursement to municipalities, which would be the city of Perry, but it's not required, and the same for constitutional officers. So their advice was to that we should assemble a local team as a critical control point. The point of contact should be the county office. School districts were not included in the funding. We were also advised that the county administrator should put together a solid plan, and that we actually form a policy group and follow a holistic approach. So, and also we cannot use this as revenue replacement. So,
what kind of replacement?
Revenue replacement.
Okay.
So even though we can demonstrate at this point that there will probably be a reduction in our revenue that is related to COVID, we cannot use these funds to replace this. So what I would recommend in light of all of this guidance that's swirling around is the first thing we do is to form some type of policy group. And with discussions that we have with the county attorney, the finance director, the clerk's office, emergency management, we felt like that if we form a group that's based off of our local mitigation strategy group, possibly our finance director, someone who can represent economic development, and someone to represent the constitutional officers, so that group could meet, come up with a solid plan, and bring that back to the board for consideration of the $3.7 million.
And I think that's a good idea, and I think you should be the administrator over that, and you point this committee that you're talking about, and it's a broad spectrum committee, and I like the idea of the someone from the QCDA, you know, and I know, I'm sure that there's someone there that would be more than willing.
Right.
And then y'all see what you can come up with and then bring it back for the board's consideration. Now, I do have to ask this question, though, since you mentioned COVID several times, and since our EMS service has to potentially deal with a lot of COVID situations, could any of that be directed to the EMS?
Possibly. So one of the first questions I asked after our initial webinar, I spoke with another county administrator, because I feel like we I need as much input as I can from other counties. And some of the counties have already received their funding. So Florida Association of Counties has a website set up where we can actually look at other counties' plans and see what they're doing with their money. And you know, they're already out ahead of us because they received their money first. So that being said, that was one of my first questions. Can this money be used to possibly purchase an ambulance? And right. Several counties are looking at that, but we have not received clear guidance at this point from Department of Emergency Management. But I can tell you that there's at least two other counties, if not more, who have asked that question. So that is certainly something that we can pursue.
But if they don't have to pay back of the ambulance that they buy that I have to pay. So it might be something that would be really interesting. We just don't want to jump off and do something.
No.
That then we have to come up with the money. But if there's any way that that could be used for EMS, I think that's a good use of it.
Let me say something. I was doing the, when we come up and we talk about the COVID-19, the hospital shut down all unnecessary operations, all of this. That was really been lost. You know, they just about cleaned that hospital out and almost shut it down, depending on COVID-19 and not doing necessary and unnecessary surgery. That money should be replaced. If this money can be used for that, I think it should be some for that.
Well, that has been discussed with these groups several times, and
the group or with this, the people that send that money out. What group is that?
So Florida Association of Counties is running a lot of this information down for us.
Okay.
And so they have numerous attorneys who are working on the wording to help keep us out of trouble.
Okay.
And we have been told from the beginning this is not to be used as revenue replacement. So I don't know that we could use it for that. That would be something that obviously we need to look at. But and we're getting more guidance just about every day on that. But when I looked at some of the other counties' plans, I didn't see that was, you know, a plan that they had pursued. But I certainly think it's something that we can look at.
All right. Well, let me ask you something else. I tried to call, and I did talk to Jason Schultz's office. I talked to two people. And there's some people in Taylor County who had to either shut their business down on 19 uptown and everywhere else because there was for lack of a better word, they had to close it down because there was no business. And the state recommended they close it down because of COVID-19. Now, when you look at Tallahassee and those people up there, everything is something like $6 million given out and it was gobbled up by the people who had the lawyers and could afford the lawyers, but the poor people that couldn't afford the lawyers, they didn't get that. They got checked. But the people in Tallahassee couldn't get the lawyers and was offering the 35 or 40 employees, they got money. The same thing about Taylor County, you know, there's very few businesses out there on 19 or uptown. It got 15 to 20 people. Mm-hmm. But these people had to close their little businesses. We should have been able to get some of that money too. Where did we fall out in that category of getting some money back?
This money. That's what I'm talking to you about now.
Okay. All right.
So this is the money this is Taylor County share, and the total is a little over $3.7 million, and it has to be spent by December 31st.
That was my question.
Now, here's the bad news. Okay. We got 25% of it up front.
Yes.
And so 3.7 has to be spent by the end of this year.
Yes, this calendar year, and the 75% of it is reimbursement based. So it looks like when we looked at it originally, we have to spend the money first and then get reimbursed, which is
tough.
It is tough. Now, I spoke with Chris Doolin last week, and I told him, I don't know that we can do that. I mean, we don't have that type of, that's over, you know, with that $2.7 million in our reserves.
Did you ask him if we do spend it and they don't get it back to us in time that we get interest on it?
I did not ask him that. What I asked was, is there any way we can get this money up front? And he said that, you know, we should petition Department of Emergency Management, but I don't know at this time if that's even a possibility. So I am concerned. I mean, I think that the initial $940,000, we'll be able to come up with a spending plan for that. I am concerned about this other 75%. If we can only spend that money and obtain reimbursement, I don't know what the turnaround is. I just don't have those details at this time, but we will be running that down. There are a lot of things.
That's real risky for us. We're a poor county.
We are.
Again, this seems kind of discriminatory to me that the poor counties like us may not be able to take advantage of something that's there to help these poor people. And pick, and the counties that have more money, they you know, this would be nothing to them.
Well, and that's why I wanted to bring it to the board's attention to see if you want me to, number one, if we can move forward with forming a policy committee, and then I can get that group to work while I try to work with Florida Association of Counties or Small County Coalition to see if they can help us find a way to receive the additional, you know, the remainder of the funds up front, because, or they can answer our questions if we spend, you know, $500,000 at a time, and then how long will the reimbursement be for that? I mean, if it's a quick turnover, it may be more manageable.
Okay, but I think, you know, what we need to do is we need to get with Chris Stewart, and we need to get all these small counties that belong to the Small County Coalition to draft letters, and then get the Florida Association of Counties, because these are two big lobbying entities. And if you could get those two groups working for the counties to try to, they've got a lot of power, they've got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Try to get this changed, because this is really unfair. And we got people that need this money.
Oh, yeah. We got some residents haven't come back to tour course yet. They still 25 and 30
percent. They put their hard-earned money in to open up a business and then.
Yeah.
And they laid off a lot of people that lost money, too.
They sure.
Yeah.
So can you try to, you know, have them like soon and see if they can put something together? I mean, surely other counties.
I think so, and I did speak with Mr. Doolin last week and told him how concerned I was. I mean, he was very concerned about us forming a group and making a plan, and I said, okay, yeah, I get that, and we'll do that, but here's what we really need help with.
Absolutely.
We need help with a way to receive our funding up front, because I can spend all day looking at what Pasco County did, and that is not going to help us, because it's difficult for us to try to front that type of money. We don't carry that type of cash reserves. Plus, we're in a time where we're not spending our capital money in an effort to, you know, preserve all that we can for whatever type of impact that we may have from COVID-19.
I say this is so risky for us, and if we don't take advantage of this, then this is money out there that can't be touched. So there's something really wrong with this picture.
You know my idea, what my idea was, you know, was to see if we could bond it. Mm-hmm. You know, so keep that in mind too.
Okay.
Y'all understand what I mean by bonding?
Yes.
Borrow the money, and then when you get it, you pay it back. In other words, if you ain't got enough money to for $3.7 million, but you've got the, you know, you're going to get it if you, you know. So that was my idea. The problem with that is that there's only, you know, this is done on purpose. It's not. That, you know, if somebody's thinking of some Philadelphia lawyer.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about Mississippi either. I'm talking about it was done on purpose. And so when we were having our meeting on this, I said, well, can we bond it? And by that I mean, simply say, can we borrow the money to do this thing? You know, because we're up running, we borrow money, and then when we get the money, then we pay it back. And the only problem is that this is all contingent on getting the money. So probably not going to, but still asking that question. Okay, and see also if y'all agree, if anybody else, if anybody else got that idea, then they do it like other small counties.
You know what, and I also would tell that Democrat, I believe it's about $20 million in about five or six counties
in this area, and they were a little smaller county, Taylor County, Michigan, wherever. I said, well, Don, how in the world are we going to get this filtered down to the people who actually lost their business, the money in the businesses? How are we going to get it down to them? The little mom and pop, the community restaurant is one particular.
So what I would say is if the board has an interest in maybe having some type of grant program for small business owners, that is something that our policy committee can certainly come up with an idea of how we do that. I know other counties are doing that. They are offering individual assistance to people, say, people who cannot pay their rent or the utility bill. So what they're doing is they are actually making the checks, the payments, it looks like, made directly out to the utility company. So they're not necessarily giving out cash, you know, vouchers, but if people bring them their bill or, you know, a mortgage payment or a utility payment that they cannot pay, some counties are saying, okay, well, we'll pay it on your behalf. Other counties are offering small, you know, some type of assistance to businesses. And they have certain rules in place, like it has to be a brick and mortar business, for example. So, believe me, I have looked at other counties, and I think that is something that our policy committee can certainly take into consideration and even draft some type of application that can be used and some type of way to make that funding available if that's what the board wishes to do.
Well, I got a brick and mortar business.
Now, we need to take action on the board to authorize you to form this committee.
I think that if you make a motion to approve the grant agreement and also ask me to form a committee and bring a plan back to the board, that would be good.
I'll make that note.
I'll start it.
You might have to repeat for me, but that's my intent.
Okay.
You form the committee and start to work on this.
I'll put that note.
Okay, and that you approve the agreement for the funds.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a motion by Commissioner Page and a second by our two people.
I made the first and he reiterated the second.
Commissioner Murphy.
For the record.
So we got the motion and the second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Good. 38, the county administrator to provide an operational update.
Since our last meeting, we are at the point where we have 101 positive cases of COVID-19 and eight of our citizens or residents in the hospital. Because of the rise of COVID and not the decrease in the positive numbers, I have basically paused our reopening plans. We were able, since we are inmate work squads were returned to us, we were able to open our parks because that way we have someone to clean the restrooms. But that's as far as we've gone as far as our reopening plans. The community centers and the county facilities remain closed at this time.
In the park, you talking about sports complex too?
The sports complex is open for passive recreation, and we have also opened the softball and baseball fields, and that's basically upon request. So if we have any of our teams who wish to have a pickup game or practice or anything like that, then we will certainly line the fields and maintain the fields and allow them to use them. But our actual recreation program, we have not been able to continue because we do not have enough coaches or really children to continue where we left off with our baseball program.
So we've got Hodges Park open?
Yes.
Southside Park
is open.
Hampton Springs
is open. The bathrooms are still closed at Hampton Springs.
Right. We've got Shady Grove Park open.
Yes.
Okay.
So
I need some guidance from the board. I realize that everyone, some folks are eager for us to reopen our offices. The library, we're offering curbside service. I have not heard any complaints from any patrons because we're able to give them individual service. But my recommendation would be that we pause until we see what direction we're going with the positivity of these cases.
I support that, and we've not had really any interruption in our business anyway in terms of customer service and doing the things that needed to be done. So I for one, would support that.
I would like your input on our community centers. I realize people are eager to start using the different community centers for gatherings, but I was a little concerned when the cases continued to increase instead of going the other direction. And we could certainly allow usage of the community centers in groups of 50 or less. My only concern with that is it may be difficult to control those groups.
But you can't control everything, and more than you can control the restaurants, and you see what's happened with the bars around Florida, so
yes.
We can't control everything.
Right.
I would think that we go along with what's in place statewide. That's 50, because still 50
yes,
people.
Yes, it's 50.
Then max. 50 max, right?
50 maximum. Yeah. And we can certainly grant permits for that if you are comfortable with groups of 50 or less in our community centers and some of our, you have heard that one.
We still want to use safe distances, right? 6 people.
I mean, well, we can certainly request that.
Yeah.
But that's difficult to.
It's important.
Now you're talking about 50 people outdoors, not.
No, I'm talking about inside. Inside our community centers is what I'm looking for some guidance on.
Well, the recommendation from the state is saying 10.
I think the governor's executive order is 50 at this point. It was 10, and then in the reopening, I believe it was moved to 50.
But I remember seeing external, outdoors is 50, 10 is internal. We need to clarify, we need to make sure where that number is.
Because
50 indoors doesn't sound.
I think you can pull that up because.
Yeah, please.
I thought it said 50 indoors, but I could be very wrong.
One second.
Did I bring up something that's not on the agenda?
Sure.
My understanding is we still have a vacancy on the hospital board. Since our number one choice is not allowed to serve.
Who's that?
Oh, wow. How are we going to go about filling that vacancy?
I haven't heard that they're on the office.
Are you talking about Ashley?
Yeah. I haven't heard she wasn't around. Is that right?
I've got my information from the hospital attorney who sent a letter to the hospital. It's a conflict.
So she's an employee?
No, well, she's an employee of Tallahassee Memorial, and they have a boss that says you can't serve on the board. But there's an agreement between DMH and EMH that they're allowed 2 seats on the board, but that'll make them have 3 seats. Now, they don't talk out of turn, might know more than that. Didn't you understand the one?
I did not know that has been resolved as of yet.
Pardon?
I am not sure that that's been completely resolved.
I didn't hear you.
Good. It hasn't been resolved yet.
Well, it hasn't been resolved.
That was my understanding.
Well, maybe it'll be resolved.
Well, you know, this board right here, we appointed someone that every one of us wanted on that board. It's right. Our hospital, and we appointed somebody we wanted. Now, who can tell us that the person we appointed can't be there?
Well, my opinion on it is, why didn't they contest it when they filed the application?
Yeah.
Well, if there was a conflict of interest, why didn't they file then?
We'll have a line there that says, if you work for Calais Memorial, or, you know, for other reasons, you can't serve. But that's in the future. What we're talking about is the past. They're very qualified applicants, and we show them. So I'm glad to hear that maybe this is still in the works. That this person's going to be allowed to serve.
All I know is it hasn't been resolved, and I'm not quite sure what we're waiting on, but we had our say. And we said we wanted this person on the board, period. And that's what I think that should happen.
She's on the line and just raised her hand if she was going to speak and not have the answer to the other question.
Yes, sir.
There's somebody that wants to speak.
Yes.
What's the number?
Her number is 7366.
Oh, you guys didn't get it wrong, Mary. This is Ashley.
Yes.
Before.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so since this has been brought up, I just want to let you all know that there has not been resolved at this time. There was I did receive my letter in the mail, and I have not received anything else from the hospital or the board or anything that states otherwise. I did, because of a agreement apparently between CMH and DMH that we have not been able to see, I did get an attorney's advice, because I felt like that this had been pre-discussed, and the fact that I was already a CMH employee had already been discussed and not cleared, so it wasn't until afterwards where there was a problem. So I did go to the attorney to see if a conflict of interest truly exists, because if it does, then obviously it's the best ethical decision for me not to serve on the board, because I wouldn't want to jeopardize anything in regards to the decision making. However, if they decide, the ethical board of Florida decides that there is no conflict that exists, then I will in fact serve my duty as I was appointed to do, and I plan to do so. My attorney that's working on it, Ray Curtis, he is actually waiting on DMH to give us the copy of the agreement between DMH and CMH in order for the ethical board of Florida to be able to make a decision. Generally what they do is they make a decision, and from what I understand, it's some type of, you know, conflict. And even in their own bylaws at DMH, by the way, it says that if the conflict of interest arises, just like anywhere else, you don't vote or participate in any activity that it would, you know, conflict with. I have no interest, investment, no anything that meets the criteria of, to my knowledge, of a conflict of interest. But obviously, the ethical board will decide the ultimate, and then they will decide if it does exist, to what extent, and how can we, whether I can serve or not. So at this point, we're waiting on Klein, which is the hospital attorney, and I am assuming Thomasstone and TMH to release the contractual agreement between them. And that's about all I know, but in regards to that, so we're waiting on a holdout from them.
Okay, now you mentioned in the beginning that you received your letter. Do you want to say what you, explain what you meant by you received your letter?
Yes, I received a letter from the board of county commissioners and from the county that effectively said that I was appointed to the position for the hospital board, and to, you know, my term and when it would start and when it would end, et cetera. So since then, I have not personally received any letter. Apparently there was a letter that did go through to the county from the hospital attorney that said there was conflict of interest, but I'm not really sure who decides that and how they decide that. The board is not elected by the hospital, it's elected by the Board of County Commissioners. And so therefore I don't think that they get the just to say of that. They cannot pick their board. So it will ultimately come down unless you all decide otherwise. But from what I understand on the board statute, you are the hiring and you are the firing of the board.
Okay, another question. Have you and your attorney formally asked for what you need to be presented to the Ethics Commission?
I know that we're going to put in writing via email, because I am CC'd on my email,
However, I don't know about the formula here, from what I understand, Clark said that he would give it to Ray, and on my last discussion with Ray, that had not been done yet, so I'm not sure what the holdup is, and where, you know, that is, and why the agreement hasn't been released, or if it's not planning to be, or what, but I can talk to Ray and see. I just want to make sure we have all the information, because I, like I said, I don't want it to come in the future, there'll be an issue.
Have y'all established some sort of timeframes? Because, you know, we appointed you, we're waiting for you to be on a board we appointed you to.
Absolutely, and I agree. I'm very eager to serve on the board. From what I'm seeing, once we did this thing with the ethical committee, it can take 2 to 4 weeks. Obviously, with COVID, stuff slows down a little bit. I would like to be on the next board meeting at the hospital to make the decision, especially with the recent, you know, shutting down of multiple people. I would like to be able to help choose and the decision making.
Okay, thank you for calling in. Conrad, if we appoint somebody to a board, we're sort of in limbo here. We've said this is our wishes.
Well,
what do we do? What can we do?
Well, my position would be that the decision needs to be made between this young lady and her employer. She may need to decide whether she wants to be on the hospital board, or she may want to work for the hospital, you know, the TMH. Or she might be able to do both. But as far as our board is concerned, she's been appointed by y'all, but you don't have the authority to make TMH do anything as a practical matter. And when she said she's going to get an opinion from, you know, the Ethics Commission, I don't know whether you're going to get an opinion on that from them or not.
I don't know whether you would or whether you wouldn't,
as a practical matter. I've often just used that and called, called up for an oral opinion, which is not so much, doesn't hold as much weight to give an idea of where it's going to go. As far as y'all are concerned, y'all have done what y'all are supposed to do.
As far as I'm concerned, we appointed this young lady, highly qualified, and she can stay on that board.
Well,
I'm not concerned.
Well, y'all haven't.
We've made our decision.
Y'all haven't told her that she couldn't be.
Right.
Right.
You know?
So, when they have that meeting, my advice might not be good, but I would encourage this young lady to go have a seat at the table.
Take her seat on the board.
Yeah. I'm the board of the county commission.
I believe they asked for him.
Advisory opinion.
Yes, sir.
I just don't know how the DMH board or whoever can take precedence over us when we appoint that board, part of it anyway.
Unless she has a separate contract with DMH.
She's an employee, you know.
Didn't they reference something in the DMH bylaws? Isn't that what gave them? So, from what I recall, there was something in the DMH bylaws that made them feel like there was a possible conflict.
Well, that don't think they go by that, because I think there are other potential conflicts of interest, and I'm not going to get into that, but if one thing's going to be a conflict of interest, everything should be a conflict of interest.
Agreed.
But as far as I'm concerned,
we think discretion would be the better part of valor with regard to this board.
Say again?
I think discretion would be the better part of valor with regard to this board, and wait and see what happens with regard to TMH, and the person that y'all, I think her name is Ashley.
Ashley McCormick.
Yeah, Ashley McCormick. Appointed. I don't know that you want to get into this fight.
Not at this current time.
Not at this particular point in time. Let's see what happens.
Are you all able to join?
We can now.
Yeah, we want to.
Do you wish to say?
Yeah, I just want to make it really. I do. I want to make it clear that in regards to, my job has not contacted me. This is not a violation of my job. This is a supposed violation through TMH and their agreement with TMH to some agreement that resides not in their bylaw, but some agreement or contract that exists between TMH and DMH that says they will allow, because TMH, I mean, TMH currently has employees that represent TMH come to the meetings that are 50% of the board.
No.
However, I'll make it very clear, I am not on that board. I do not apply as a TMH employee. I apply as a Taylor County citizen. And that's why I'm looking for the idea.
That's understandable, but before we go any further, we need to stop this conversation.
Well, you've heard what we said. We appointed you, and we expect you to take a seat at the table.
Agreed.
Thank you.
You got our support.
Thank you, guys. I look forward to helping out the community.
Thank you. To answer the question about the group size, I'm sorry. The governor's order under Section 2, Responsible Individual Activity, reads, all persons in Florida are encouraged to avoid congregating in groups larger than 50 persons. It does not differentiate between indoors and outdoors. So it's not a mandate, but I would like some feedback from the board if you are ready to allow congregating in community centers. We can certainly advise that it is to be in groups of 50 or less, but that's not something that we can necessarily oversee.
Okay, now the governor's orders do not differentiate between inside and outside.
Yes, ma'am.
Correct. How can we say people can't use the community centers when we've opened up Potter's Park, we've opened up all, you know, several other parks? How can we say that you can't use a community center?
The only concern that I would cite is that the facilities that we have opened up are outdoor facilities.
If you go down to these parks, you're seeing lots of people, and I don't see a lot of segregation.
Yes, ma'am.
And again, there's just not enforcement.
Right.
And that's what we were talking about earlier when we were talking about mandating these masks being worn. There's not enforcement. DPR is not enforcing their own laws.
Well, again, and the governor's reopening plan doesn't mandate groups of 50 or less. It says should, not must. So.
Okay, so there's no established law.
Right, but I do feel like that we need to, but I would say we need to follow the recommendations in the executive order just to protect us. As much as possible.
So, 50 people outdoors? Is that what we want to look at?
No, this is reopening our community centers, which are indoor facilities.
Okay, so what are the capacities of these facilities?
They differ for each one.
It's about an average from what, 20 to 100?
Well, I know Shady Grove, I think the capacity is around 100. Forest Capitol Hall is much higher.
Okay.
And I would encourage the board to open the county buildings last as far as reopening. And that's more for continuity of government, as we've discussed before. And if there's, you know, exposure or illness in, say, in this building, you could lose several departments. So that's why I'm differentiating between, you know, groups of 50 in this building with your workforce versus a group of 50 in a community center.
Well, you're keeping the measure of continuity in mind.
Right, our continuity of government.
How's that, board?
Well, at this choice, we have no map to hold us to make the decision to keep it closed or open it up.
Say that again now?
We don't have any map to say to keep it closed. We don't. And if we have something attached to it, like say, for instance, state statute XYZ says we have to have 50 people outdoors and 20 indoors. Mm-hmm. So what do we have to stand on to keep it closed right now? Nothing.
Well, we have the fact that the cases are increasing, not decreasing.
Right, but we also have a statistical measure that it's more contagious but less deadly. So there's an arguing factor there as well.
I'm not familiar with that.
It's on the CDC website.
Right.
It's on the DOD website.
I'm not arguing.
But we have to look at all these angles to say right. We don't have anything to keep them closed.
So what we can do, I know in our, we're under a local state of emergency, and the way the local state of emergency is worded is that we can grant permits in alignment with CDC guidance, I think, and this was before all of these executive orders started coming out. So my recommendation to be in line with our local state of emergency order is that if we open our community centers back up, that we ask them to keep the groups at 50 or less.
And that's fine with me.
Okay.
And I want to say that my personal views are certainly very different from some of the things that I feel like that, from other things. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, use of face masks and all the other things. My personal views are different, but I have to vote for what the majority, I think, is wanting.
So what we can do is, and if the board wishes to reopen the community centers, I can certainly communicate with each of our points of contact that social distancing should be practiced, or the use of masks, groups of less of 50 or less, hand sanitizer available, all the safety measures that we could certainly put in place. Or I can ask them to submit to us a safety plan. So we have that type of correspondence that is on record of what they plan to do to keep those environments safe.
What about the sign and hold harnesses?
Well, I had a question about that. Would that be, but typically, would that be for every person that enters that facility?
Absolutely.
Okay.
How many communities are we talking about? We've got
Shady Grove, Steen Hatchie, and then we also need to take into consideration Forest Capitol Hall.
Forest Capitol Hall.
It's not really a community center, but it's certainly a rental facility. Yes, sir.
We could put that in motion. Whole farm agreements for independent signatures, each person.
I mean, we have a great draft that we've been looking at. Sure. Okay. Sure. I mean, we can certainly, you know, they're going to go and congregate. I'm going to be congregating. You know, I have to be congregating.
You get closer than 6 feet, don't wear masks, and they're in the Board of County Commission or the county property, then I, as your attorney, recommend that if somebody's going to do that, you know, they're independent, they want to do that, then they certainly need to sign a whole harmless.
Would you like for us to require a safety plan?
Okay. And a lot of these people, we don't have to worry about this until November, but a lot of these people that say this is a hoax is going to go away in November. Sorry. We don't have to worry about this virus after November.
I hear that.
I hear it.
No weather, no kidding.
A lot of the people that think that say this is a hoax, that this hoax will go away
after
November.
Okay, I see what you're
saying. I get it now.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I heard this.
I hope they're hard.
But how do you got that?
Okay, so we got that straight. What else do you need?
I've got some informational items. I'll try to move through them quickly. I know we're all getting tired. First of all, due to a grant that was obtained by Don Perez, we have partnered with the Division of Forestry to replant trees at Forest Capital Park. And I would like to give a special thanks to Jack Smith and Jared Beauchamp, who is our forestry, or the forestry agent. They are helping to plant, and they are going to help care for 60-plus longleaf pines at Forest Capital Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very exciting. So you'll see some little trees going in. They have some areas marked. And
I've already got them in.
All 60?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we are working on getting the all the stumps ground. That is definitely an eyesore. We just recently had to cut down the 5 or 6 trees.
Six
trees because of disease. So they have taken the initiative not only to plant, you know, to mark out the areas and walk the grounds with Don, but they've also committed to help to water the trees, because I was certainly concerned, it being July, of planting trees right now. So I really appreciate their assistance.
They probably planted trees, weren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're about 4 feet. Overweight high. They're pretty good size.
They're pretty good size.
Yeah.
That's good. But is the road back yet?
No, wait, which road?
Going into the Forest Capital Park.
No, that actually was an item that we put on hold as far as a hold for our capital projects. Mm-hmm. So are you talking about the parking area?
So
what we did was we put that in next year's budget request and identified it as a fiscal year 2019-20 capital project, but we rolled those funds over until we have a better idea of what's happening, with our budget and with our revenue. Speaking of our budget, I have some dates for our budget workshops. Monday, July 20th, 23rd, 27th, and 29th would be our special meeting.
20, 23, and 29.
And 27, if needed. And 29.
Mm-hmm.
At 9 in the morning?
We generally are a little fresher at that in the morning.
Is 26 or Sunday.
So the 20th, 23rd, 27th, and 29th would be our special meeting.
Okay.
And the binders will be available on July 14th, so we will reach out to you when the binders are ready.
Okay.
We do anticipate an increase in our values this year, and I will ask our property appraiser to make a presentation to the board. We do expect an increase. Our concern is we have a couple of concerns. One of them is for our sales tax, bed tax, and gas tax revenue. The concern is how much they will decrease or could potentially decrease. So we'll have a better idea by the time we start meeting the effect of that. Also, speaking of budget, the state budget was approved. The governor did exercise his veto rights. So we had submitted several earmark requests. The Southside Park request was vetoed. The courthouse project to upgrade the elevator was vetoed. But the fire station project was funded. So we can expect an agreement for that forthcoming. And that is to actually construct a new fire rescue facility.
And where's it going to be?
Pistol Road.
We had planned on Pistol Road on a piece of property that the county owns. And the cost of that funding, the estimated cost is $580,000. So we haven't received the grant agreement as of yet. I feel very thankful to our legislators for helping make this happen. I know they worked hard on this for us, and our staff has worked hard on this. So I really appreciate that funding. Also, what was vetoed in the budget is our SHIP program for next year. The entire appropriation for the SHIP program was vetoed by the governor. So we will not be able to spend any funds on our citizens this upcoming budget year.
And he got our old state? I get it, but...
No, it would have been statewide.
Statewide?
Yes. Yes. Also, it does look like we will be receiving a refund for our work squads for the time that they were out, which I did not anticipate. So I did want to notify the board that we would be receiving refunds for those two work squad contracts. So it's about $16,000 for each squad. And that's all I have.
That's all?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Number 40, comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. There's something that you wish to speak about that was not on the agenda this evening. You may call in now and state your name and address. You can speak for 3 minutes. Do we have any callers?
Number 7226.
Number what?
7226.
Sorry.
7226.
Caller 7226.
Okay.
Caller 7226, if you'll state your name and address, you may speak now.
They hung up. 6124.
Caller 6124, if you'd like to speak, state your name and address now. 6124. Caller 6124.
Okay. And number 7366.
7366. 7366.
Okay.
Okay. All right. No calls. Okay. Item 41, board informational items. Commissioner Murphy?
Nothing to bring to the table at this time other than thank you for your endurance. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Commissioner Dix?
Yes, ma'am. Two little items. One of them is Shelby Neighbor Road. Overgrowth on the road.
I'm sorry.
Shelton Edwards.
Okay.
Overgrowth on the road. One side of the road, you're coming out and meet the car, you're going to run into bushes. And,
okay.
Another thing they asked me about, do we have a machine that will go down the side of the road and clean up the edges so the grass won't be growing on the road and deteriorating our pavement?
Called Motor Grader.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that the same road?
The same road. Okay. It and Kinsey Road. Kinsey Road and Sheldon Edward Road.
Okay.
Okay. Again, I want to reemphasize people out there on 19 uptown, the small businesses, they said they suffered during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's any that way we can help them, I'd like to see somebody from that. Some market from that group be on this board that has an interest. You know, we could stack it up. With
what I would recommend is that we have one member who can represent all of them.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay, so maybe someone from the TCDA. I have someone in mind maybe that we can ask to be on the board, and then someone from our LMS committee who would be, you know, someone from the city, someone representing constitutional officers, obviously emergency management. So we can certainly have someone to represent our small businesses.
Good.
If, and I'll tell the small businesses when I meet with them that there's help on the way.
Well, wait.
It's still the federal block. And that would have been given.
No, sir, not at all. I would say until we know what type of programs, when we will bring a plan to the board, and then when y'all approve what type of program you wish to move forward with, whether it be a grant program or, I mean, I think there are several possibilities.
Okay.
That, so I would say we'll bring a plan to the board. That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
Now, this CARES money, this $5 million plus dollars, that make me...
$3.6 million.
$940,000 this year, $3.7 million by the 31st.
It's $3.7 million total. So the, so the $940,000 is the initial 25% disbursement. So they're basically fronting us the initial 25%. But the total is $3.6 million.
Anyway, it's a big chunk of money.
Yes.
I agree with Commissioner Dents. We want that money to filter down to help the people and the businesses that have suffered.
Yes.
I would like, you know, we're going to pay people's electric bill or rent subsidies or whatever it is. I don't want all of this $3.7 million to be spent in one district. I want it spread out so that everybody, I just kind of see a booger behind every tree here. You know what I mean?
Right. So, what I would say is the way, I guess, a holistic approach that was explained and some of the other counties are doing is they're saying, you know, X percent needs to go to, you know, an ambulance or to reimburse the city to reimburse for COVID-19 expenses, and then a certain percentage be set aside for small businesses, you know, as an example. And then another percentage be made for individuals with, you know, rent, utility assistance. Is that what you would like to see?
I'd like to see.
I would too.
Okay. I'd like to see where it's going.
Yes.
But I can see one or two influential people getting all the money.
No, that's why I think it's been impressed upon the county administrators to have a good plan, to have a holistic approach for the funds and really designate a certain percentage and where that needs to go. And then it will be up to the board to approve the plan that this committee would bring forward.
Good.
Is that okay?
I'm comfortable with that.
Okay. Commissioner Dempster, are you comfortable with that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that too, that it's to make sure that it's COVID related.
It has to.
There's a lot of people who've got problems with their rent and their electric bill, but have anything to do with COVID. But if they've lost their job, and the businesses that, you know, have to close, and they can prove where, you know, they lost money.
Right.
And their employees were laid off. Those are the people.
Yes, ma'am.
That I'm sure that they're going to make sure that those are the ones that get it. Commissioner Moody.
I'm like you about that. I think the risk of the print were shut down for over a month and they laid off all their employees. That's where if they can document the proof, that's what it really needs. And all business. And that's y'all.
Right.
I appreciate everything going on here tonight. It's been a good meeting. And I'm glad we're getting back to business. And I'm hoping that this mosquito issue will settle down, but it takes them to be, with that rain we got today, it's going to be that much more.
Yep.
So if you recommend all your constituents to go by and pick up the tablets and throw them out and dump out all the water they can and cans and bottles and places in their yard, it'll help, you know. But now, the mosquitoes are really, I've got a lot of calls about them.
I've got a few calls, and I tell my wife,
you dump out all the fire pots you got, we won't have any mosquitoes in our yard.
That's why she's gonna run real fast.
That's right. She's gonna run out of back.
Yeah, that's about all I got.
How many new flowers and new cats you got?
But now, if we get a hurricane set up out here right now, cause the city, if you were a bunch of rain, we're gonna have a flooded county all over again. I can see it. Everything just is full of this whole lot.
We need, you know, our staff and the crews to be ready, and I know they're prepared.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to also talk about mosquito control. And I know I've worked one of the death, but particularly in the Nalwa's area in Osun, it's total coverage down there with trees. And most of it's in the shade, water that they dump out. And these people are really suffering down there. So, and I know you're not caught. But I just want to make sure that we keep on doing what we need to do to try to eliminate those, because, you know, by now I realize we can't do aerial spraying. You know, that's been suggested by a lot of people, and it cost us $500,000 before when we did that. So if we can keep that truck going.
Yes,
now, I know last week you told me that the truck didn't run some of the time because it was raining.
Yes.
Now, if how do they determine that? If it's raining, when do they start? 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock?
It's usually at dusk. So I did meet with the department head today and asked him to, you know, help us decide, you know, at what point do we cancel the missions? Is it because there's a forecast, or is there a way for us to have a better idea? I mean, obviously the missions were canceled at the end of this week because we had a forecast, a heavy forecast for rain all, you know, every day of the week. But I did ask him to help me ascertain exactly when that decision is made, and is that something we need to, you know, we need to call in and at least try, or do we just cancel based upon the forecast?
If it's not raining, I want my district spread.
Depending, from my understanding, depending on the chemical utilized, you have your temperature and humidity has a certain scale, and that has to balance to get that chemical dispersion. From my understanding, that's what Metro Day goes by.
But I just know that if it can be sprayed, I want it sprayed. And then again, if we don't have a driver, somebody in this organization needs to be in that truck driver. I don't care who it is.
They've had a hard time getting drivers, whatever.
But they, if it comes down to department leaders has having to drive it, the truck should be driven every night that it's not storming.
And I do know that the coordinator for that department has been driving herself to make sure that we get these missions completed. So I appreciate
her doing that. How many, short of how many needs to be laid up that night, just one or two or three drivers, whatever. But I appreciate what they're doing. I want them to keep vigilant about it. This is a health issue. I don't have anything else. I appreciate our meeting tonight. I think we have good dialogue, and I want to thank staff. I want to thank you, Lawanda, for the many hours that you put in, and your leadership. It's not gone unnoticed, and we really appreciate it. Anybody else have anything else?
I forgot to ask the question about our meeting schedule and how you wish to conduct. Do you wish to have a second meeting in July, a workshop, our budget workshops? Do you wish to continue this format for our budget workshops, where it's Facebook Live and conference call? And do you
I'm
wish
not to ready have, to open these doors here. I'm just kidding. I'm not ready to open the doors and fill this room up,
right?
Because you can't. I mean, unless I just don't want to do that.
But I think we need budget time. Each constitutional officer, maybe we can get one more person in here, like a Bruce.
And I'll allow them to make a presentation?
Yeah, when it's their time to talk about it.
When it's their time to talk, let them in.
Okay, we can schedule that.
Yeah. Or if it comes to Kelly's staff in their department, let that one person come in and sure.
We need Danielle there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But I'm just not wanting to fill the room up and open it up for everybody, but the people that are, that it's a necessity for them to be here should be here.
Now, do you wish to have a second meeting in July?
I think we need to.
I don't. I mean, we're tended to business very well, but we've already got 4 budget workshops, that's a lot of exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless it's something urgent. I think we can't wait. We can have the next one in the next month. Same format we use tonight.
So the latest governor's executive order, well, that pertains to this, allows us to continue teleconference call meetings through the end of July, I believe. And then we can wait and see if that's extended again.
Through the end of July?
Yes, sir.
So then after that, we don't have to...
After that, we're on our own.
You don't know. Should we have another executive order? Yeah, I mean, the way things are going, with so many more cases, we're leading the nation. So I think you need to play that one by ear, Wanda.
Yes, sir.
That's my...
And I agree. It's just amazing to me that the governor doesn't want to mandate a lot of things. He gives us the ability to do it, just like with these masks. I'm not going to do it, but y'all can do it. But yet, when it comes down to us deciding if we're going to keep our meetings the way they are, it sounds like without him saying, okay, we can't do that. So it's kind of like sticking out of both sides of your mouth, so to speak.
No, you're not, man.
Well, I said it too.
Good for you.
I just don't give it. Yes, I do give it, but I don't like it.
You don't like what we do about it.
Right. Anything else from anybody? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Okay. We got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank y'all.
Hey, I think everybody's pinched for a moment. Those guys have been going around filming and causing trouble and everything, like our little fit county. They're outside, they've been outside since we started our condition tonight. So we need to just if you will go straight to your vehicle, phone call dispatch and have a police officer come over. To stand by is to peace.
Okay, because some of us
yes,
are
right.
Out back and you know,
about I didn't hear what you said.
Those people that's going down, coming on the street, they're outside.
They just want to film,
They've got everybody's license plate on. I would bring the phone to the Okay.